going to be is no question at all. Over 800,000 people enjoy their productions every year. And in just the last 10 years, Roundabout has won 15 Tonys and 18 Drama Desk Awards. But the only prize they didn't have was a theater all their own. But that's now changed, thanks in part to a bond issue insured by American Capital Access. The funds raised have helped Roundabout buy Studio 54, the same space where they packed audiences with a five-year run of Cabaret. The building is ideal for Roundabout staging of classic American musicals. And the bonds are pitch perfect for New York investors. They're fully insured by ACA, so they deliver a higher yield without higher risk. And for city residents, they're triple tax exempt. Around this time of year, that makes for savings even your accountant can get theatrical about. To learn more, ask your broker about ACA-insured bonds or visit us at ACA.com.
Remember the last time you bit into a sweet, crunchy apple, grilled onions and peppers, or made a fresh salad? The Harvest of Hope Foundation reminds you that many fruits and vegetables are harvested by migrant farm workers.
There are so many questions. How will we ever make her feel at home?
Don't forget us, David. We'll be affected, too.
Call 1-800-438-4380 for your free caregiver's kit. This is a service of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Air America Radio. Question authoritatively.
Good morning. I'm Mark Riley, along with Sue Ellicott and Mark Maron, here on Air America Radio. It's 7 minutes past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition. Today, the Salon Story of the Day, with exclusive new revelations about Condoleezza Rice. Plus, we'll have the morning's presidential briefing. That's coming up. But right now, I'm joined by Mark Maron and Sue Ellicott. Good morning.
Hello, Mark.
What's up?
Not much. Hi, Sue.
Good morning.
How's everybody feeling this morning?
Just fantastic.
Really?
Wow.
Fantastic?
Fantastic.
Brilliant.
It's brilliant.
I'm getting used to these. Getting used to these hours.
Are you?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, you know, you kind of look a little...
I'm relaxed today because I'm starting to appreciate the fact that the one great thing about, you know, having these hours is after we leave here, you literally feel so disjointed that you're high. You know, and I don't get high anymore with the real stuff, you know what I mean? So to be high during the day is kind of exciting to me, except that, like, around 6 in the afternoon, the wall between reality and non-reality starts to break down.
Things start to fade away. Before your very eyes.
Have you ever had that weird moment where you realize you're the guy in the subway talking to himself?
Yeah.
That's a rough one. That is a rough one to come back from, man. I mean, what do you do? You know what I mean? All you can really do is look up and go, oh, sorry, I'm just thinking out loud. Or else you could just commit to it and be like, yeah, so what? You know what I mean? But then, like, what if that sticks? I mean, how far are any of us away from, you know, like, get away from the cart. I live here. You know, what has to happen?
I think it's because you shaved. You had that very clean, smooth look today.
Yeah.
You look good. No, but
all I know is that 2 million people are listening to us on the internet.
On the internet.
And my buddy Phil Bauer in Los Angeles, called me. My friends are now calling me at like three in the morning here when I get up. It's like midnight there. They're like, what's up? Good time to call? Perfect. I'm getting ready for work. You know what I mean? And he calls me up and he's like, dude, I've been listening to the station. I turn it on in the morning and I listen all day long. And, you know, and he's like, he would never listen to this kind of stuff. And he says to me, he says, I've always avoided being informed like that because I can't help but get depressed and apocalyptic. But I really like listening to the station because I'm starting to get angry. And this is a guy that did primarily, you know, nice paintings. So I think we're going to inspire him to really, you know, put the fire into his palette, man. So I'm glad that people are listening in Los Angeles on 1580 AM KBLA 1580. And I'm just happy that it's going out there and that, you know, it's starting to catch on and make an impact.
It seems it is, definitely. National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice, who we'll hear about quite a bit today. Her testimony comes after significant pressure on the White House to let her testify under oath and in public. White House officials yesterday said to expect no apology from her today. But before you judge her on today's remarks, we wanted to share with you some comments we dug up that she made on January 17th, 2001, at an event sponsored by the U.S. Institute of Peace.
On Iraq, I think it's been very clear, and I believe you would see in the testimony that Secretary Powell gave, that our belief is that the Saddam Hussein remains a tremendous threat to the region, that There has to be pressure brought on him, continuous pressure brought on him to live up to the obligations that he undertook at the end of the Gulf War, that the sanctions regime needs to be reinforced and strengthened, and that it will be the goal of this administration to make certain that we deal with Saddam Hussein in a way that is consistent with the tremendous threat that he remains to his neighbors, including the potential that he is continuing to try to develop weapons of mass destruction. I think that that's probably what it's wise to say at this point, and at some point in time it'll be clear what else may be in store.
What a convoluted thing that was.
Well, she's right about one thing when she says that Saddam Hussein is a threat to the region. Yeah, yeah. The region being the Oval Office.
Absolutely. Condoleezza Rice's remarks came after the outgoing National Security Advisor, Samuel Berger, who we spoke to, I believe, told her at that same event that America faced a new enemy.
We must understand as a nation that we are engaged in a wholly new battle against an international terrorist network in dozens of countries, loosely affiliated and yet all interconnected, which is deeply committed to injuring and destroying the United States and our allies. This is one of the most serious threats the next administration will face.
Well, in case you didn't think he made his point strongly enough, Samuel Berger went on, telling Rice in the audience what his administration had done and what the Bush administration ought to do.
We have spent the last several years not simply what's most well known as the military strikes against Afghanistan and Sudan, but more systematically going after this organization, disrupting cells, arresting people. And I believe the next administration will need to build on what we've done to take a systematic, sustained, long-term effort to render this international network far less a threat to the United States.
One more time? One more time?
Are you overseeing this like it's
I'm overseeing
a council?
This is a council. Well, look, the guy is going on and on and on, and he said it once more.
More people have been killed by bin Laden and his network, more Americans, than any war, and all of the wars since Vietnam. There has to be a systematic campaign that we have begun, and I hope I know the next administration will continue.
Oh, you do you? I don't think the next administration really did continue.
Maybe they didn't hear what he was saying.
He said it three times.
I know, but maybe they were doing something else, you know, office work. They, you know, it's like, what? Oh, never mind.
The multitasking administration.
Mm-hmm.
It is amazing, though, isn't it? I mean, it comes under the do you really not get it category. I have to tell you one more time.
Yeah.
Well, but considering how long it took, you know, Condoleezza Rice to, you know, just say, you know, we're focusing on Iraq. I mean, if it takes her that long to put together, you know, one statement, I mean, she probably has no time to listen to anything.
It's very hard to take seriously their comment that we took the 9/11, that we took the threat of terrorism seriously before September 11.
Well, yeah, given what she said and given what Sandy Berger said, it appears Sandy Berger was the one that had the concern about the terrorists, these international terrorists. And Condoleezza Rice, even back then, in January 2001. Was focused on Iraq.
Well, he was on our show last week, right?
And yeah.
And we said, you know, do you think that she got it?
And he said,
yet. Well, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Well, yeah, he said, well, I drew her pictures, I showed her maps, you know, I did a popular dance number and sang it, nothing, absorbed nothing.
It is astoundingly arrogant, though, isn't it? I mean, what it does show about this administration is an enormous amount of hubris, that whatever anybody who was an expert in a previous administration told them, they felt that they knew better. They felt that they could ignore really, really quite specific advice and expertise from someone as knowledgeable as Samuel Berger. I do find it astounding. And then the duplicity of trying to tell the public now that we took all this seriously and we were basically blindsided by 9/11, that we could have had no idea of knowing that anybody was going to slam airplanes into, you know, the two tallest buildings. Mm-hmm. In New York City.
But do you think that they really, do you think that they thought that they could honestly, by focusing on Iraq, that the assumption was that they could just connect it all, you think that they knew that before 9/11, that no matter what happened with the terrorist threat, they would be able to bring it all back to Iraq? That
no.
They really thought they were going to sell that bill of goods?
No, I think they were waiting for something. I think they had Iraq on their minds, and they were waiting for something to light the fuse.
I think you're
fuse.
Right.
I think
they
were
right.
And here comes 9/11, and it's perfect.
So that supports the idea that I might have said, is that they might have known it was going to happen, and they just sort of said, let's just, you know, wait it out so we can really do what we need to do, which is, you know, consolidate power for as long as we want.
I don't know that they felt that something that catastrophic was going to happen.
But knowing something would happen.
And in a sort of, you know, the conspiracy theorists would say that they might have, they knew that was going to happen, and they kind of wanted it to happen.
Something, though, but
I
you
don't
could
think,
say that,
I, yeah, well, I don't think they wanted it. I don't know if they want something like that.
That
but
bad.
They needed or wanted some other kind of evidence. I mean, they had clearly decided, really probably before George Bush even moved into the White House, that they were going to do something with Iraq.
But
and that
were,
was very, very obvious.
But so in that logic, you know, 9/11 does sort of, you know, play into their grand plan of things in the sense that they were waiting for something, maybe not that catastrophic, but they were willing to wait.
Oh, yes, they were willing.
Oh, yeah, yes, absolutely. Anyway, still ahead, we'll find out the latest details on the new fighting in Iraq. And we'll take your calls on Iraq, the campaign, and anything else on your mind. We're at 866-303-AAR0. That's 866. I keep getting that wrong. Ignore me. It's 866-303-2270. Right here on Air America.
Air America Radio, where mothers are American idols.
The all-new season of Chappelle's Show continues this Wednesday night on Comedy Central, and we're still responding to fan mail from last season. Why is it taking so long? Because Dave likes to answer each and every letter himself. That's just the kind of guy Dave is.
Everybody has something to say, and I read.
Dear Comedy Central, I find Chappelle's Show to be offensive towards white people. I do not feel that the show promotes a positive image of white people.
I thought there were plenty of positive images of white people all over television. That's why I keep my show devoid of them, to keep it fair and balanced.
Check out the all-new season of Chappelle's Show this Wednesday night at 10:30, 9:30 Central, only on Comedy Central. He's true to his audience.
I'm Dave Chappelle, and I want to represent you.
He's true to his roots.
Hey, y'all, look, it's a boat with some white people on it.
And he's coming to your house.
So, show smells good.
Chappelle's Show, the new season continues this Wednesday night at 10:30, 9:30 Central. Still Dave, still dangerous, only on Comedy Central.
Next question.
Hello.
Hello, this is Danny Glover.
Danny Glover?
I'm giving a wake-up call to every man in America. Mr. Johnson, did you know that at every age, American men have poorer health and a higher risk of mortality than women? Men experience higher instances of death due to hypertension, cancer, stress, HIV, and depression. As a matter of fact, men live sicker and die sooner from all but one of the leading causes of death. We take more risks, handle stress differently, and are less likely to schedule checkups or to follow up when symptoms arise. If you really want to be a man and take care of your family, you can start by taking care of yourself. So schedule an appointment with a doctor and find out what might go wrong before it does.
I'll call today. And thank you.
You're welcome.
For more information, contact the W.K. Kellogg Foundation at WKKF.org.
An XM satellite radio listener gets commercial-free music day one.
Spend time listening to all of XM's music channels today, especially jazz and hip-hop. Not a single commercial break, so I couldn't call my girlfriend Allison.
Allison versus XM, day two.
Woke up with head on table next to XM radio. Ears felt good, but neck was a little stiff. Spent 12 straight hours listening to commercial-free punk rock channel. Forgot to call Allison again. We'll send flowers tomorrow.
XM 1, Allison 0, day 6.
4 voicemails from Allison. We'll call her back after Springsteen Marathon.
I'm rooting for you, Allison. Day 12.
Allison called, said if I'm not dead, we're through. We'll call her back just as soon as they break for a commercial.
Don't hold your breath, Allison, because all of XM's music channels are 100% commercial-free. And this year, you get over 120 digital channels of music, news, sports, and talk. Check it out at stores like Best Buy and Circuit City. XM Satellite Radio. Required monthly subscription and hardware sold separately. Activation fee applies.
Air America's Unfiltered.
I got to retrain myself to
not be awake in the 2 to 5 hours a.m. So that's all.
Biz Winstead, Chuck D, and Rachel Maddow.
Is that when you're most creative?
Yes.
Oh, man.
1 to 5.
1 to 5, and then that's it.
No, that one ain't it.
Air America's Unfiltered. Weekdays 9 to noon on Air America Radio.
I'm Sue Ellicott here on Air America with Mark Riley and Mark Maron. And we're going to go to some callers right now. We have Steve in Queens. Steve, what can we do for you?
Good morning. How are you?
Good, thanks.
How are you doing?
That was explosive. What you just played was explosive. I'm shaking in my boots. I mean, we've heard about this for a long time, but for the first time I've heard it, and it's unbelievable.
This is the Samuel Berger trying to spell it out to Condoleezza Rice, how important it was to focus on international terrorism,
you
right?
You should be playing this every 10 minutes during the hearings.
Okay, we're going to play again right now. Get off the phone.
Do you have any music you'd like to accompany it?
I don't know. This is game, set, and match.
Could you just tell by the way she was talking, there's no way she could have listened to anything?
Yes.
Yeah, she's paying it all no mind.
Unbelievable.
Over and over and over again.
Unbelievable.
Well, we're going to keep circulating these. There's no doubt about that, Steve.
Please do.
All right. Thanks for
thanks
calling.
Thanks a lot.
Have
Steve.
A great day.
Okay.
Steve in Queens, New York.
Who do we have now? How about, should we go to Aaron?
Aaron in Queens as well.
Aaron, that's a day for Queens.
Two folks from Queens. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I would like to concur with the last caller. I think that clip is incredibly damning. And in general, I really appreciate what you guys are doing. And I'm so excited about this whole network. And Sue, I'm a big fan of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. So I hope we'll be hearing you again on the weekend.
Oh, yes, tomorrow.
Okay.
But don't go away from Air America. We want you here every day.
Yeah, well, I'm bridging two worlds. Right,
well,
now.
Me too. It's good to bridge two worlds.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to kind of relate how during the Clinton administration we had such an aggressive independent counsel, and I realized that that statute expired, but how exciting would it be to you know, spend just maybe 1/33rd of what Ken Starr spent investigating Clinton, spend that $1 million investigating Harkin Energy, investigating the relationship
Absolutely.
With the Cheney Task Force, and the deceitful
And Enron.
And the truly deceitful information that has come out of this administration. And one thing I remember in particular was right when the Bushies moved into the White House, and there was all this discussion of vandalism in the West Wing and removing the W key from the keyboard.
That was ridiculous.
You know, that was proved to be completely fallacious. But it never got any press, and you know, I also remember shortly after 9/11 that a lot of people were giving grief to Clinton, saying this is your fault, you never took care of these guys.
They're still doing that.
Well, we'll be listening in to the 9/11 Commission later today, and I'm sure that everybody's going to get some kind of grief. But you're right, we're saving it mostly for the Bush administration. Aaron, thank you.
There should be. He's right. There should be some sort of independent counsel on everything they're doing.
Yeah, they have spent a lot less than Kenneth Starr did on his investigation. Yeah. It's a fraction. A
but not just
fraction.
On 9/11, on all this, on the corporate crimes as well. I mean, I think he's right.
Well, Bush didn't want to allocate $11 million on September 11th. I forgot how much Ken Starr spent, but it was an awful.
Bush didn't want these commissions to take place anyhow.
Not even with Tom King.
Richard
not
in New
even
Jersey.
$1. Okay, Richard.
Hey, Richard. How you doing?
Good morning, Mark, Sue, and Mark.
How you doing?
Hello. Are you listening to us online or on LIB?
Well, I have listened to you both online and on the radio. I get a fairly clear signal on the radio.
From LIB 1190?
Yeah.
All right, right
I
on.
Get a much better on, you know, digitally clear on the internet, obviously.
What's on your mind there?
All right, this question is pointed particularly to Sue, okay? I heard her say before. I don't believe in a conspiracy theory about this. Okay, I mean, this is like so easy for us to say that conspiracy, anything of conspiracy means you're nuts. Okay.
Yeah.
FDR knew about Pearl Harbor
right
before it happened.
Right.
And given that we know the redactions from the 9/11 Commission about the Saudi connections.
Right.
which they won't allow it. And didn't we know that the Bush families had cozy relations for three generations with the royal house of Saud and the Bin Laden?
Yeah, why trust them at all?
Okay, why is it so hard for us to put two and two together and think that, you know, our government wanted this to happen? Maybe they didn't, you know, give them the direct go-ahead.
Well, Richard, I just think that's extreme. I think that it's absolutely spot on to think that there are the connections between the Saudi royal family and the Bushes. Yes.
We had Craig Unger,
who's written a book called House of Bush, House of Saud, on yesterday. I recommend the book if you want to read more on that. But I truly do not believe, however much I disagree with the Bush administration, that they wanted 9/11 to happen. I do believe that they wanted an excuse to go after Saddam Hussein, and I do believe if they probably hadn't come up with an excuse, they would have gone ahead anyway. They did not need a terrorist attack to do that. They had made up their mind that they were going to take out Saddam Hussein. But I'm sorry, I will not push things to the conspiracy level that 9/11 was a gift.
But aren't you sort of saying that, though? They were waiting for something to happen? I mean, aren't you saying...
They say that they wanted to make a case. I don't know they were waiting for something specific. I think that they would have made an intellectual or geopolitical case
but they couldn't
to go there. Anyway. No, they might have, you know, further down the road gone on the, you know, the instability in the region, the human rights violations, the things that they came out with after they so-called won the war and the mass graves were dug up. And don't you remember the enormous amount of coverage of the mass graves and that the administration saying, you're there for the SE, we were right to go in there, look at the atrocities.
I know, but they would never have been able to make that case absent.
Right, it played into it. I'm with Richard, man. I Hunter S. Thompson once said, those of us who lived through the 60s and 70s realize there's no such thing as paranoia. It's all true.
I don't know if I go so far as to say...
Come on.
One thing I will say, things have changed to a point in this country. When people first floated this, which was back in the days right after September 11th, folks were ready to string them up. Anybody who said that the Bush administration knew ahead of time about September 11th.
Well, that was all pushed by the Bush administration itself. They wanted that. They wanted people to be vilified for saying that. But what we're finding out now increasingly
is
that they did know that something was happening. They did know there were significant risks.
So how do you say that's not conspiracy theory thinking? Maybe it's not conspiracy at all. Maybe it's just the way it is.
I think it's arrogance and ineptitude. I don't think that adds up to... I just don't go the conspiracy route.
That's what my friend
Maybe
Jim
I'm
said.
Just too reasonable.
Arrogance, ineptitude, and evil. Evil is the necessary ingredient for the conspiracy.
Evil as in they had such a fixed political goal that they were not good. It's ideological. It's ideology plus arrogance plus hubris.
And ineptitude.
And ineptitude, because that was all the intelligence failures, lack of communication between the intelligence agencies.
But I can't. Complicity through negligence is a real thing, and I don't know that you can tell the difference sometimes between ineptitude and just not paying attention on purpose.
Right.
Right now I have our presidential briefing for today, which is taken right off of whitehouse.gov. It's the morning schedule, and you can go there and look at it, or you can listen to me do it. Today, the president. President has a light day ahead. He'll spend the day at his Crawford, Texas ranch, where it's sunny and 78 degrees. 7 a.m., wake up. 7:05, probe national security advisor again. Wash up. 8 a.m., sit at desk. Hold papers in front of face for 15 or 20 minutes. Nod as necessary. 9 a.m., Regis. 11:15 to 11:30, shoe tying time. 11:30 to 12, jog for reporters. Stay on message. All we bombed was the outer wall. 2 p.m., discuss trade with Tony Blair. Puerto Rico for Northern Ireland. Come on, what do you say? Puerto Rico. Come on, Tony, come on. 3:45, drop off monthly thank you card to Rehnquist, Scalia, and Thomas. 5:15, send Condi an AOL kiss from Karen Hughes. Deny citing national security. 6 p.m., follow up with IRS on Operation Franken audit. 8:30, sleep before Laura gets home. That's our presidential briefing for today.
Get those April receipts 8th. Together, Al. That's my right. goodness. Coming up, the latest from Iraq. A Supreme Court justice says erase that tape. And another curveball for Condi. Stay with us here on Air America Radio. Up next, news headlines.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. The long-awaited testimony of National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice will finally come today as she faces the Independent Commission on 9/11 attacks. Rice is expected to issue a 20-minute statement trumpeting the administration's concerns about terrorism before the attack. She will later respond to questions about statements made by former counterterrorism figure Richard Clark. She will also have to respond to questions she made earlier about the attack. Rice is not expected to apologize to the families of the 9/11 victims. Situation in Iraq remains highly volatile following yet another day of losses for both American soldiers and Iraqi citizens. Fighting to restore control of Fallujah and Ramadi reached an all-time high yesterday. This morning, questions are surfacing about who was really inside Hamas that was bombed by the U.S. military. The U.S. is saying insurgents. The Iraqis say worshippers. Independent presidential candidate Ralph Nader is calling for the impeachment of President Bush for what he said is deceiving the American people night after night after night about the U.S. involvement in Iraq. Nader charges that Bush's behavior qualifies for the high crimes and misdemeanor impeachment of the Constitution because he plunged the country into war on a platform of fabrications and deceptions, with American soldiers returning home sick, injured, or dead. Wayne Gilman, Air America Radio Network News.
Air America Radio. We'll hand over the tapes.
I'm a wife, a mother, and I'm on a waiting list for a double lung transplant.
A lung disease is threatening Robbie's life.
I've had cystic fibrosis all my life, but now my future depends on getting a transplant. My lung capacity is at 26%, so if a healthy, normal person would shut down three-quarters of their lungs, that's what I'm functioning on. As my health has declined, I miss some of the things that I love to do with my daughter: bike rides, taking long walks, rake leaves in the fall and run and jump in them with her.
Right now, tens of thousands of people are waiting, like Robbie, for an organ or tissue transplant.
My driving motivation is my daughter and being there for her. It's hard to imagine a greater gift than the gift of life from an organ donor. It means life. I get to keep living.
You have the power to donate life. Be an organ and tissue donor. To find out how, go today to www.donatelife.net.
I'm Sue Ellicott here on Air America Radio with Mark Maron and Mark Riley. We're taking calls at 1-866-303-AARO. That's 1-866-303-2270. And just to recap what's going on in Iraq, a hospital chief in Fallujah said that more than 280 Iraqis have been killed in fighting this week. And the Iraqis are staging a massive protest outside that besieged city. The Marines have stepped up their attacks. They've gone from strategic targets to much more aggressive fighting. And at least 17 Marines have been killed in the last 3 days. So, okay, a broader shift in strategy taking place in the post-war occupation, with fighting through Iraq from north to south.
We'll take controllers. It's crazy.
Well, Donald Rumsfeld has insisted. I don't know if you saw the Pentagon briefing yesterday, but he stood up there with some guy in uniform and said, "Oh, no, it's not out of control, and you know everything's under control," and didn't look terribly convincing.
Did you hear Hans Blix said that we've basically created Iraq has become a machine producing terrorism.
Yeah.
It manufactures terrorists now.
But that's what, you know, Hosni Mubarak, the president of Egypt, said that would happen. You know, for every one bin Laden you kill, there'll be 100 more in his place.
How could it not happen? How could it not happen?
But, you know, many experts in that region who know and have lived and worked there said that this is exactly what will happen. You know what? It's all about winning the peace. They declared very early they won the war. And they, you know, people predicted that there would be enormous religious tensions, that there would be pockets of resistance that would coalesce and fight back, and that's exactly what the U.S. military is seeing this week. Underestimated pockets of resistance.
You think they probably didn't count on so many different factions working together?
No, what's interesting, I don't know if you saw that, you know, that the U.S.'s sort of greatest clerical ally,
Sistani,
Sistani came out came out today and basically condemned the U.S. military and the Marines' action and said that, you know, he kind of sided with al-Sadr, basically.
I think he's a real politician, that guy. I think he's sort of Sistani seems to be hedging his bets, like he wants to be on the winning side no matter what.
Well, he's known as a moderate, but he refused to condemn the uprising that was being led by Murtada al-Sadr.
He's diplomatic. He's like, you know, I don't know who's going to win. I want to make sure I'm on the right side of it so I can have a place, you know, in the top echelon of the ruling class.
Whoever runs the country.
Well, exactly. It's important that he does stake out some kind of position, as they haven't yet come up with, they haven't formed yet any kind of a plausible government that appeases various groups inside Iraq.
What do you think that would
Sunnis,
be?
Whether it's the Sunnis, the Shiites, whether it has to be some sort of very complicated coalition, doesn't
right.
it? It has to acknowledge the concerns of the Kurds, the Sunnis, the Shias.
Kind of like Israel, maybe?
Yeah, there's no, that's right. There's no great example. As long as it's not like Italy, where they change governments every 10 minutes, we should be okay. All right, who are we going to go to? Adnan in Manhattan?
Yeah. Adnan.
Hi.
Good morning.
Morning. I teach Middle Eastern Studies and Islamic History at NYU. Yeah, and I think that the media really is not getting how important and potentially dangerous this Shia uprising is, and there's been a lot of effort to try and minimize his importance or influence, which is really, in a way, besides the point.
This is Sadr?
Al-Sadr?
Yes, exactly, Murtada al-Sadr. Because he has a lot of credibility, not necessarily to be, a kind of statesman or a leader, but certainly as a martyr or a kind of symbol of all of the thwarted aspirations of the Shiites over the last, couple of generations, but particularly as a way of expressing how unhappy the Shi'i community is with the way in which these negotiations and the interim basic law and the interim governing council.
So what's the worst that could happen in your eyes?
Well, I think overreaction and really trying to crush him rather than sort of defuse him and, maybe make some negotiations with him and but unfortunately, it seems that the rhetoric has ratcheted up so high.
Do you think that he is? There's some sort of competition between him and Sistani in who's going to be in favor?
Well, there was definitely beforehand, and certainly those kinds of rivalries are taking place now. But what's interesting is that he has offered to sort of submit himself to the authority of Sistani as his military officer. It's his military arm.
So we're basically going to have what we have in Ireland or what we have in the Middle East with Hamas. You're going to have a political wing and a spiritual wing of the same uprising movement. That's what we could get with these two.
Well, you could. I mean, it's obviously not Sistani's desire. He doesn't particularly like him.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But it's very difficult for him to disassociate himself from Murtada because the coalition, shut down his newspaper. Sistani has said that he has legitimate grievances, and obviously the overreaction. First, he was calling for calm, but now with the overreaction, he has basically just been warning the coalition not to overreact.
Well, he's clearly a clever guy, and what he taps into very effectively is this sort of venting of frustration from people in Iraq who are, angry that things seem to be unstable, angry they don't have electricity on a consistent basis, if at all, and, angry that things do not seem to be moving swiftly to sovereignty.
He's sort of like Rush Limbaugh.
Adnan, thank you very much for calling us from Manhattan. Let's go next to Jason from Virginia. Jason, good morning.
Hey, how's it going?
All right, how you doing?
Good. I just want to make one little point. I'm a little concerned. I listen to Air America all day long, just by the way. Mm-hmm. And
are you working?
Concerned. Yeah, well, kind of.
how are you listening to it? On your computer
like
in
us.
The office?
Yeah, I listen through the WLIB website.
Oh, WLIB, sure.
Yeah. And then, my point is I'm worried that people listen to Fox News and they hear bad stuff about Kerry. And listen to you guys hear bad stuff about Bush. They might get turned off completely to voting. You know what I mean?
Just throw up their hands and say, pox on everybody.
Yeah, nobody's good.
Well, a lot of most people don't vote anyways in this country.
Well, yeah, you got a point there.
And I think that, the best thing, if you are, I think what we're trying to do here on some level, on a very deep level, is just get rid of Bush.
Yeah.
You know what, Jason? There is, if the polls are to be believed, there is a large groundswell of concern about this specific election. I mean, people are talking about it, and I mean, we're in April now. We're still 7 months away from this thing. And now, you're right, this could all dissipate by Labor Day. People could not care one way or the
other. Anything could happen.
Anything could happen. But there seems to be a very high level of concern, a very high level of interest in this election, a lot more perhaps even than there was in 2000 at this time.
We're just trying to get people worked up.
Yep.
Yeah.
Worked up, psyched up.
Good.
Okay, well, what's your recommendation? We're nicer to Bush or we start bashing Kerry? Which do you prefer?
Don't stop bashing Bush, because I love that.
Okay. Thank you.
Guilty pleasure, huh?
Yeah, just point out a few things that are... You know, I know you guys, you know, are trying to be a little fair.
Okay, how about this? I really like his hat.
that's fine.
Okay?
There you go.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to be fair. They might be, but what do you suggest we do about Kerry?
Just give people a choice. Just say, like, you know, Bush is bad, but if you go with Kerry, these things will be different, be better. Not all the time, because I know it's not your job to, you know, be a commercial for Kerry, but make
no,
sure
we're not
people
getting
know
paid
that there is a
quite
choice.
For that.
Okay, well, when Kerry starts coming out with a bit more clarity, with a bit more oomph,
and
we'll,
when he gets on
we'll
the phone,
let,
when
we'll
we get him
know.
On the phone.
We get him on the phone, or when we get him in here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're working on it.
Thanks, Jason. Go back to that, whatever you're doing.
Yes, and I won't, I won't tell your boss that you're not doing anything.
Well, God, I hope. You think he's at work already?
Yeah, he said he was listening to us. I didn't know you could get us on the WLIB
website.
Oh,
yeah, you can get us on
it's
the
amazing,
LIB.
Isn't it? American workers are the most productive in the world, yet they're on their they're streaming the show while working.
Well, I've talked to people who work in offices, which I don't do generally ever, barely ever work with people at all. This is a first,
this
and
is
I'm
the
trying.
First for you,
I'm trying to do it properly. But I talk to people who work in offices. They maybe do 2 hours of work a day.
They are.
Maybe.
They're always emailing. They're paying their utility bills, all sorts of stuff. It's amazing. It's a wretched being freelance. You've got to do it all on your own dime.
Still ahead. Salon.com is breaking some news today about Condoleezza Rice. And we'll have the journalist responsible with us when we return here on Air America.
Air America Radio. There's more to our approach than just repeating our opponent's arguments in an annoying, nasally voice.
The Public Theater in New York presents a play written and directed by Tim Robbins, Embedded.
A savagely witty, very smart, very screwball, and ultimately very chilling comedy.
San Francisco Chronicle.
Embedded.
Wildly entertaining. You'll find more truth about war on this stage than you'll find in most newspapers.
BBC.
Embedded.
Poisonous.
Who's that from?
The New Republic.
Whoa.
Embedded.
Savagely witty and incisive, uncompromising.
LA Times.
Embedded.
Swift, savage, sharply clever lampoon.
Newark Star Ledger.
Embedded.
Bad taste.
Who's that from?
Fox News.
Whoa.
Embedded.
Excellent, timely, and compellingly cutting satire, a tribute to the finest traditions of drama and political comedy.
Democracy Now.
Embedded by Tim Robbins at the Public Theater.
212-239-6200.
Order tickets now.
212-239-6200.
Order tickets now.
212-239-6200.
Integrity first. Service before self. Excellence in all we do. These are not just words. These are our core values. Values by which each and every member of the Air Force Reserve lives. So whether we are deploying humanitarian aid, providing relief to citizens who become victims of natural disaster, or defending freedom wherever it's threatened, the men and women of the Air Force Reserve are there, protecting our values and serving our country. And now you can become a member of the Air Force Reserve. By committing as little as 1 weekend a month and 2 weeks a year, you can become part of an organization that will impact your life and your country. Find out firsthand what our values mean to you. Speak with an Air Force Reserve representative today. Call 800-257-1212 or visit our website at www.afreserve.com. Air Force Reserve, above and beyond.
We would go from venue to venue across the southern United States and travel in a van that ran both on biodiesel gas and also on straight French fry grease.
That's singer-songwriter Rachel Garland from Berkeley, California, singing the praises of touring on biodiesel.
Our objective was to spread the word that there are alternatives to petroleum.
An alternative. Garland admits that people are overwhelmed when facing our eco problems, but grassroots education is key.
These local solutions will serve to inspire and activate us and energize us so that we can continue to spread these local solutions until they become global solutions.
Fill her up with alternative fuel online at
www.rachelgarland.com.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Circle of Life and We the Planet. www.circleoflife.org, where consciousness is cool.
The O'Franken Factor.
I was wondering if you were struck by Donald Rumsfeld's testimony, where he was asked, did you attend any meetings about terrorism?
Air America's Al Franken.
And he said something like, well, I don't remember, but I was told that I did attend one and that I asked some very penetrating questions.
Al Franken and Catherine Lanfer, weekdays noon to 3 on Air America Radio.
I'm Mark Riley with Mark Maron and Sue Ellicott on Air America Radio. Has Condoleezza Rice been the right choice for the president? Today is the day that her role as the president's perhaps closest advisor and friend will be put to the test as she testifies before the 9/11 panel. So how much did she know about the tragedy of September 11th prior, and could she have taken it upon herself to create a prevention strategy? Joining us now is Sidney Blumenthal, Washington Bureau Chief for Salon.com. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being with us. Good morning, Sidney. To Sue and Mark.
My pleasure.
Sidney Blumenthal, you've written a very, very controversial, I think, article about Condoleezza Rice and one of her former employees and her role in the Mideast peace process. Tell us about it.
Well, I've written a factual article here. I spoke with a man named Flint Leverett. Now, people have probably never heard of him. He's one of these foreign service professionals who are crucial in the foreign policy process, but who are not publicly known. He was the head of the Middle East Peace Initiative on the National Security Council, working for Condoleezza Rice. And Flint Leverett says that here's what happened to him. First, she charged him with trying to develop a genuine peace initiative after the Bush administration had dropped the ball for more than a year after President Clinton. And he was brought in on the NSC staff. She asked him to please develop all the plans. He did so. He presents the plans, and then she rejected them as unworkable and politically untenable for Bush, who would have been forced to confront Prime Minister Sharon to enact it. But now, remember, the neoconservatives inside the administration, including Vice President Cheney, are supporting Sharon and actually oppose a peace process.
But Sidney, Flint Leverett, his job would have been a nonpartisan job. He's not a political appointee, is he? Or was
not,
he?
Exactly. So not only is he not a political appointee, but Leverett told me, he volunteered to me, and this is the first time he's ever spoken in public about what really happened and disclosed the details. He told me he voted for George Bush in 2000 and wanted him to succeed, and that he's incredibly disillusioned. But he is a professional. He's a professional Foreign Service officer.
So this is yet another former Bush insider to leave the White House through disillusion about the process of how they go about foreign policy, basically.
Well, it follows a pattern that includes Richard Clark, who, after all, was a Republican. I worked with Richard Clark when I was in the White House. I was senior advisor to President Clinton in the West Wing. I knew Clark. I knew many of these people. And Bush is waging a kind of war against the professionals inside the government, against the CIA, against the Foreign Service. It's quite unprecedented.
Is there any chance we could consider Flint Leverett a disgruntled employee or a man out to make a fortune from a book or all the other kind of criticisms they've lobbed at other insiders who have left?
Well, Leverett is now at the Brookings Institution as a visiting scholar. I don't think that's something like trying to, you know, engage in some kind of merger and acquisition at Citibank. You know, he's
mentioning no names.
Yeah, he's not trying to cash in here, and he has held his account until he spoke to me in this article that appears today. He has been extremely reticent about coming forward.
Why do you think he was so reticent, actually?
You know, for professionals, they feel that their work really should be secret and that they owe an obligation to the people whom they served. And to come forward, I mean, he feels very strongly that events are so catastrophic as a result of the Bush policies that he has a higher obligation to our government and to the country to speak up right now. He's somebody who voted for Bush.
So it's a kind of, it's his conscience speaking now.
I think it is his conscience and really his higher sense of duty. It's really a shocking story that he tells. And Rice is not who people think she is. She's not this honest broker. She's somebody who caves in to the neoconservatives and Cheney in the administration and does their bidding, including undercutting constantly Colin Powell. And he, while he seethes in private, goes along with this as well.
Hey, Sydney, can you talk a little bit about the plan that was rejected and a little bit about the Christian Zionists? Because it's a very, you know, surprising thing in the article that a lot of people don't understand that there is this group of Christian Zionists that, you know, want to, you know, create a place in Israel so the second coming can happen. And that's actually, you know, affecting policy.
This is one of the surprising things that I learned from Flint Leverett, this former National Security Council staffer. I had no idea about this. He told me that he proposed this plan at Rice's directive and that Colin Powell agreed with it and was about to deliver a speech in the Middle East proposing this peace plan, which would have essentially been the same plan in outline that President Clinton had tried to enact when he was in office, tried to get all the parties to agree to, which involves security for Israel, Palestinian political reform, dividing up all the functions of Jerusalem, which would be the capital of two states, of Israel and Palestine. So Powell is about to deliver a speech. Flint Leverett's traveling with him in the region. And Condi Rice intervenes and instructs the Secretary of State, Colin Powell, not to deliver the speech because it's politically too dangerous for President Bush. And then Leverett tells me of some of the danger. It's not simply the neoconservatives. Who is it? Who is it who's behind the scenes,
who's pushing
the buttons? Karl Rove.
Karl
Rove, the president's senior political aide. And what card is he playing? Well, it turns out you might think that it's the, you know, American Jewish lobby. That's what most people would say. But in fact, it's not. The card that he's playing is the religious right of Christian Zionists.
It's a whole new group.
A whole new group, but the same, you know, some of the same, some of our usual suspects like Gary Bauer, and they claim to represent an electoral block in Bush's base.
Isn't that frightening? Because a lot of people don't realize that they want no Arabs in Jerusalem so they can, you know, provide, you know, take certain steps that are in Revelations to provide the a space for the Messiah to come back.
Well, here you have a group in which is exercising its theological imperatives in U.S. foreign policy involving the questions of war and peace. And who is their agent involved in foreign policy? Karl Rove.
But
it's extraordinary.
That's powerful.
I mean, do we not get the sense that, you know, George Bush is this blank slate who's just been hijacked?
Lever tells the most amazing story here. He says that the king of Jordan, King Abdullah, who is a very moderate, innovative, and for the Arab world, progressive figure, a young man, I've met him, has his foreign minister, who I've also met, who I know to be a very skilled diplomat, meet with Condi Rice to urge support for the peace plan. And Rice says, no, all you get is a speech. You don't get a plan. So Abdullah, who's no dummy, goes to the Oval Office to see the president and brings his foreign minister. And he makes the argument, and then he turns the floor over to his foreign minister and asks him to repeat what he told Condi Rice. Well, it turns out Condi, whose job it is to inform the president, told him nothing of her conversation. And Bush then says to Flint Leverett and the other NSC staffers who are present in the room, you know, they're in the background there, and he turns, he says, hey, good idea, let's see what we can do on that. And that's the origin of what became known as the roadmap, which is Bush's peace plan. And then Bush goes out to summit conferences in the Middle East, and he proclaims this, and he meets with leaders. And who does he charge with implementing it? Condi Rice. And what does she do? Nothing.
Clinton
Leverett says to me, she was supposed to saddle up here. And ride herd in the process, and she never even sailed up at all.
But, Sydney, tell me why I should feel anything other than despair about all of this.
Well, you know, ministering to your emotional state is
I know, especially this hour of the day.
Let me tell you that.
But work with me.
I think that given this team in the White House right now, they have no solutions.
There's no reason not to despair. Is that what
you're
okay.
I would say that you, Sue.
Yes.
You're a rational person.
Sometimes, not over this.
You're
I think
a logical,
I'm...
rational person, at least on this score. This is
well,
what's
thanks
going
for the compliment.
On. You know, this is, look, this story is similar in pattern to the terrorism story. Now, here's Bush. He writes, I'm sure.
Similar in as much that everything that they're doing is just about squeezing stuff into to fit their ideology and not doing anything so that makes intellectual sense.
Well, look, you know, here's Rice. She gave a speech on September 11th, 2001. She was about to deliver a speech. We now know part of its contents. We don't know the full text of what she was going to say, but we know what the priorities were that she would establish for the administration. Missile defense, remember
right.
that? Not terrorism. And no one in the NSC had been told about none of the staffers on counterterrorism about
Sydney.
The briefings
Sydney,
the president was getting.
Sydney, we have to run, but we thank you so much for being with us and the salon delivering the salon story of the day.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Sydney.
Bye-bye.
That's on salon.com.
Christian
okay, well, I'm depressed.
Zionism. No reason to be. Hey, this morning's morning devotional, Mark. Each day on Morning Sedition, we join hands and humbly ask the Heavenly Father for his guidance in the coming day. As you know, Condoleezza Rice is testifying before the 9/11 panel. This could affect the Bush re-election campaign. So as a show of patriotic support for the Commander-in-Chief, let us pray that Condi doesn't blurt out anything embarrassing like, we really weren't that concerned about terrorism because we were busy pre-planning our Afghani invasion and a pipeline. Let us bow our heads now. Dear Lord, we thank you for protecting George over the past few years, but now, after much stalling and resistance, comes his moment of truth. So we ask that you continue to watch over him during Condoleezza's testimony. Lo, and should she stray from the well-rehearsed script, we beseech thee, smite her with the sword of thy wrath, a bolt of lightning, or maybe something less dramatic, like one of those weird heart attacks that people have when they hit about 40 or know too much. I leave it to you, Lord, for who am I to question the ways of the Almighty? In the meantime, a team of devoted apostles will visit upon her home and office to set alight her files in reverence to your merciful grace. Thank you, Lord. Talk to you tomorrow. Amen.
Coming up on Morning Sedition, Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia gave a speech yesterday and then demanded that the tapes be erased. Plus, the gay Republican who visited George Bush at his ranch and lived to tell about it. That and more coming up on Air America Radio.
My company designs and builds offices for large corporations. After 10 years in business, I can handle just about any construction problem. But paying my bills on time, that's not always so easy.
Introducing the American Express Platinum Business Credit Card. It lets small business owners pay over time. There's no annual fee, plus you enjoy all the savings, services, and tools of Open, the Small Business Network. Apply now. Call 1-800-NOW-OPEN.
Paying over time? It helps me build my business.
Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply.
And allergies come with sinus pain. My Claritin just doesn't have it.
My Benadryl doesn't have it either.
Even my prescription allergy medicines don't have it.
Only Advil Allergy Sinus has it. It's the first and only allergy medicine with the pain-relieving power of Advil. So you get allergy relief plus advanced medicine for sinus pain. That's two-way relief.
Now I know what all the others are missing. Advil for my sinus pain.
Advil Allergy Sinus. Don't just stop allergies that hurt.
You're listening to 1190 WLIB New York, the home of Air America Radio.
Have you heard about those new...
In the next hour of Morning Sedition here on Air America, why are gays suing New York, huh? Why are they? And what did Antonin Scalia want you never to hear? We'll make up some answers, but first the headlines.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. Today will be Judgment Day for National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice as she faces the Independent Commission on 9/11 attacks. Americans are expected to get a clearer picture on what the administration knew about terrorism before the deadly attacks after her long-awaited testimony. The Bush administration had initially stonewalled the panel, headed by Republican former New Jersey Governor Thomas Kane, citing executive privilege. In the last 2 weeks, the administration did an about-face, agreeing to public testimony that paved the way for today's appearance. Rice will give a 20-minute statement that is expected to trumpet the administration's early concerns about terrorism, this before she faces questioning from the panel. A member of the Institute for Public Policy, Clarence Lussane, says Condoleezza Rice has a lot of explaining to do since her critics have given her very little wiggle room.
Dr. Rice is going to have a very difficult time trying to reconcile what, in effect, a number of confirmations now are saying, that the administration did not feel and act on the kind of urgency that Richard Clark and apparently others who were in and around Clark felt was necessary.
Clarence Lussane of the Institute for Public Policy. In other news, the death toll continues to rise in Iraq. Some of the deadliest fighting has occurred in cities south of the capital over the last 3 days. 15 Marines have been killed since last weekend. The toll on Iraqi civilians and insurgents is 3 to 4 times higher. Bush administration yesterday issued a statement to assure Americans that the situation in Iraq is under control despite the recent escalation of violence. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld says there's no reason to call up more troops to offset the recent loss. Democratic presidential candidate Senator John Kerry says President Bush needs to come clean on who will be the recipient of the transfer of power in Iraq on the established deadline of June 30th.
Have you heard about those new products to help men regrow their hair? They make some pretty astonishing claims. Instead of just making claims, we'd like to give you some pretty astonishing facts about Extra Strength Rogaine. It's a fact that Rogaine is the number one dermatologist recommended brand that helps regrow hair. And it's a fact that no other topical treatment has been proven stronger at regrowing hair than Extra Strength Rogaine. Rogaine works. The sooner, the better. And that's a fact. Not everyone responds to Rogaine. Individual results may vary. For more information, go to Rogaine.com.
One day these rats were playing in the woods.
Well, that's a mattress and that's no good.
Forests are way cool, but being careless with matches or campfires definitely isn't. So take Smokey's advice.
Only you can prevent forest fires.
So the gorgeous forest is what you desire. Don't play with matches. Don't play with fire. Yeah.
Visit us at www.smokeybear.com. Brought to you by the Ad Council, U.S. Forest Service, and the National Association of State Foresters.
Fire.
A group of New York lawmakers is calling for the reopening of the investigation into the murder of Emmett Till. He's the 14-year-old black boy who went to his death nearly 50 years ago in Mississippi by a white gang for speaking to and whistling at a white woman. Brooklyn filmmaker has uncovered evidence that as many as 10 people allegedly linked to the killing may still be alive. Congressman Charles Rangel, Major Owens, and Adolphus Towns are calling on U.S. Attorney General John Ashcroft to reopen the case. On the 10th anniversary of the slaughter in Rwanda yesterday, U.N. Secretary General Kofi Annan said that the world must be prepared to take decisive action, including the use of force, to prevent genocide from happening again. Speaking to the U.N. Human Rights Commission to launch an international warning system, Annan said the world now must act in Congo and Sudan to avoid mass killing and ethnic cleansing. This is Air America Radio Network News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman.
We must take the battle to the enemy.
The administration is very proud of the precision with which they went about yesterday's attack.
There have been apparently very few casualties, which is exactly what the United States government wanted.
This all has to be challenged. Dissent is what makes this country healthy. And the media has to fight for that, and we have to fight for an independent media.
We come and listen and support it.
I'm Tim Robbins. Please join me, Amy Goodman, Bernard White, and Juan Gonzalez on Tuesday, April 13th, to celebrate the launch of Amy's first book, The Exception to the Rulers, exposing oily politicians, war profiteers, and the media that love them. On Tuesday, April 13th at 7 p.m. at Cooper Union's Great Hall at Astor Place in Manhattan. For tickets to the event and the reception proceeding, call 212-431-9090 or go to democracynow.org.
Your oldest has just turned driving age. Time to add him to your policy. So you get in your car, drive down to your insurance company. Hunt for a space, double park, get a parking ticket, get in a fight with the meter maid, get thrown in jail, meet a guy named Wally. Wait a minute. This is just a bad dream. You've got Geico. You don't have to drive anywhere. You can do all that car insurance stuff online. Oh, that was a close one.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. Online at geico.com.
I'm Robbie, and I'm on a waiting list for a double lung transplant.
A lung disease is threatening Robbie's life.
I've had cystic fibrosis all my life, but now my future depends on getting a transplant.
Right now, tens of thousands of people are waiting for an organ or tissue transplant.
It's hard to imagine a greater gift than the gift of life from an organ donor. It means I get to keep living.
You have the power to donate life. Be an organ and tissue donor. To find out how, go today to www.donatelife.net.
Wolves are what biologists call keystone species. They're predators at the top of the food chain. So if you remove the wolf, you create a massive imbalance.
That's Emma Ruth Weiss, Western Director of Species Conservation for Defenders of Wildlife. After a 70-year absence, wolves have been reintroduced in Yellowstone Park.
Now there's food on the ground again for other species.
The return of wolves helps keep elk on the move.
Now that the wolves are back, the elk don't stay in one place. And the willow and the aspen are absolutely flourishing. And it's excellent for beavers, who also need these plants for food and to build dams. And what do we get with dams? Cool, deep ponds that are needed by young fish for their survival.
Wolves still need protection. For all the 411 on the gray wolf and its vital role in the ecosystem,
www.defenders.org.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Circle of Life and We the Planet. www.circleoflife.org, where consciousness is cool.
Air America Radio. Quiet commentary, top of our lungs.
Hey, I'm Mark Maron here with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley on Air America Radio. It's 7 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition. Today, he's a Republican, he's a politician, and he's gay. How do you know? Who would know that? We'll talk to him about his trip to George Bush's ranch and more, plus Judge Scalia and the Judge Scalia bootleg tapes that he won't let anybody hear. And I briefly need to address something that happened yesterday because it's going to be an ongoing issue with me. I had an argument with a Catholic about, whether or not a communion wafer was a symbolic disc. And
it's good. I can tell the way you say it that you've just changed your mind.
Well, I thought through the issue because I don't like being called ignorant. And, in the Time magazine piece about our network, I was called sort of incendiary and raw because of calling religious people. I should be more sympathetic. And I said to what? Organized delusion. And, I just want people to understand that I understand that if you have faith and you believe, you're unable to see the truth properly. I understand that. And I understand that your truth is what it is, and truth is all relative to perception. I understand that. But in terms of how I behave around people who believe, the reason I'm criticizing religion is not just because I think religion is bad. I think it's important to have faith. I think faith is possible without having a belief system in place. It can come from just being rational. But I don't think I need to behave like – sometimes when you're dealing with people who are very religious, it's sort of like dealing with a retarded child, in terms of
this sounded as though you were starting out with some kind of apology, backpedaling, and it's all gone
No. You didn't seriously think that was going to happen.
Let me explain. Say you've got a retarded child who's pointing at a tree, and he's saying, look, it's a rocket. And because he's retarded, all you can really do is go, yes, it is a rocket, but it's a tree, but it's a rocket. Okay, it's a rocket. Now, this guy yesterday, why bother hurting the retired child? Because he believes that, and it's all about fun.
I think it's amazing that, okay, go.
But just what I'm saying is that, I think that, the problem, the wall I was hitting yesterday, was it that the Catholic guy, and I respect his beliefs, I really do, but it's going to always be a wall that you're going to hit, is that to him, he in order to have faith, he has to believe what he believes. If he questions it, then his faith comes into question, and I understand that. That's his choice, but I don't have to, you know, agree with him, and my truth is objective and a little more rational in terms of how I'm assessing it, because I don't have the same faith, and I think we can agree to disagree. You know, I think that most people believe in God just in case.
Wait a minute. Really? You said all that to say we could agree to disagree.
Yes. I don't know.
Yeah, but I think if you go back, if you were to look at the transcript, you could probably.
I think it's. I admire anybody with a belief system that they stick to and they think is coherent and they
really
can't,
like Hitler?
And they can't find a, well, kind of anybody with a small a.
Mm-hmm.
That you know, a religious belief system. I just, because it's intriguing, it's fascinating.
But when it comes into politics, though,
if you're the kind of person who's naturally quite cynical and questioning, no matter how curious you are, it's very easy to pick holes into everybody's argument intellectually. But I do, as long as somebody's doing no harm.
But the Christian Zionists, like people we were just talking about with Sidney Blumenthal, when you have an organized, politicized, you know, religious movement that is influencing politics, don't you think that that is, you know, should come into question?
Certainly politically that should come into question, but I mean, the whole kind of...
Okay, we'll
you know.
We'll deal with this on the phones in an hour when people call here to start cursing you out.
Look, I think everyone should have the freedom to do what they want.
Yeah, including me. I'm going to go move on.
Okay, all right.
Let me move on.
Go for it.
Before we go to what Condoleezza Rice is saying today, we thought it might be helpful to look at what she had to say in January of 2001 and what the outgoing National Security Advisor, the Clinton administration, Samuel Berger, had to say to her. So we got our ace researcher, Susan, onto the case, and she dug up these remarks from an event held by the U.S. Institute of Peace, a nonpartisan think tank. And the purpose was to pass the baton from Samuel Berger to Condoleezza Rice. Here's what Berger had to say to the audience and to Rice.
We must understand as a nation that we are engaged in a wholly new battle against an international terrorist network in dozens of countries, loosely affiliated and yet all interconnected, which is deeply committed to injuring and destroying the United States and our allies. This is one of the most serious threats the next administration will face. We have spent the last several years not simply what's most well known as the military strikes against Afghanistan and Sudan, but more systematically going after this organization, disrupting cells, arresting people, and I believe the next administration will need to build on what we've done to take a systematic, sustained, long-term effort to render this international network far less a threat to the United States. More people have been killed by bin Laden and his network, more Americans, than any war, and all of the wars since Vietnam. There has to be a systematic campaign that we have begun, and I know the next administration will continue.
Okay, anybody who says systematic that number of times in the clip is kind of, you know, he seems as though he's pretty clear, right?
Hammering it in.
He's systematic.
He is, and he's serious. He's systematic and he's serious. Later that same day, here's what Rice had to say about the Bush administration's goals.
On Iraq, I think it's been very clear, and I believe you would see in the testimony that Senator Powell gave, that our belief is that the Saddam Hussein remains a tremendous threat to the region. There has to be pressure brought on him, continuous pressure brought on him to live up to the obligations that he undertook at the end of the Gulf War.
And?
That the sanctions regime needs to be reinforced and strengthened.
And your point is?
And that it will be the goal of this administration to make certain that we deal with Saddam Hussein in a way that is consistent with the tremendous threat that he remains to his neighbors, including the potential that he is...
What about Al-Qaeda?
...to develop weapons of mass destruction.
Not in
I think that that's probably what it's wise to say at this point, and at some point in time it'll be clear what else may be in store.
Anytime during this conversation?
Well, at some point in time it'll be clear what else is in store. I think we've seen what was in store.
Yeah.
I think the crucial thing seems to be when she starts out, it is our belief that. The whole problem, it all falls apart. The problem is their belief. Their belief is wrong.
Be careful about that belief stuff because you're going to set him off again, right?
No, okay. sit down, Mark.
The question. I have beliefs.
He's got that look in his eye. You see that look in his eye? Look at his. Look
I have,
at him.
I have
look
beliefs.
Look at that look in his eye. He's getting ready to go off again.
I believe in me. I believe in good coffee. I believe in Ben and Jerry's ice cream.
Well,
I believe in pornography.
Here's what the administration believes in, a kind of a lame definition of the word cooperation. I just got the new edition of the New Yorker magazine, and there's a talk of the town piece right at the top by Hendrik Hertzberg, saying, giving the contents of a letter from the White House General Counsel Alberto Gonzalez to the 9/11 Commission of, on the conditions, the necessary conditions for Condoleezza Rice's appearance today. And remember, they fought her saying anything in public under oath, and they only, you know, just about got her to say, you know, to say something in private. This is a one-shot deal, folks. The reason that they have agreed is that this is, they basically, the White House has told the 9/11 Commission that they get Condoleezza Rice for a couple of hours today and nothing else. No more questions in public for anybody who works for the White House for any reason at all, no matter what the circumstances are and no matter how many holes there seem to be in her testimony or unanswered questions. That is it. This is a one-shot deal.
Wow. Kind of sounds like a New York City parking meter or something. You know, you get to park for an hour and that's it.
Yeah.
You got to go.
Can't return within 2 hours?
Nope.
Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia wanted tapes of his speech yesterday erased.
So I got a bootleg.
What was it he was saying? Hope it was this. Stay with us on Air America.
Air America Radio. We're not Fox. Period.
Introducing Venture Magazine, the progressive voice for the next generation of market makers. Hi, I'm Kevin Halloran, publisher of Venture, the magazine of risk and reward, where opportunity is seized on every page and where new ideas spring to life. For a free trial issue of Venture, call 866-MY-ISSUE and learn how Samsung steps into the cool as a serious threat to Sony, or how the hidden wealth of Vietnam may fuel the best investment opportunity of the year. In this issue of Venture, you'll discover the emergence of nanotechnology and separate science fact from fiction. Experience intimacy in the City of Angels at the Frank Gehry Design Disney Hall and enjoy the new American splendor. For those who have achieved, those who desire to succeed, and those who dream, Venture is your magazine. Call 866-MY-ISSUE to start your subscription or learn about employment, investment, and partnership opportunities. And remember, in business and in life, always Venture.
Hi, I'm Joe Perry.
I'm Steven Tyler from Aerosmith, here for RAD. Recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Yeah, you know we love it when the music does the talking.
And you know, the music stops when someone gets killed.
So never, 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 never let someone you know get behind the wheel if they've been drinking.
And they don't have to be plastered to kill someone. Even one or two drinks can impair your judgment and change your life forever.
So keep it real, friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAB, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
The story of an XM satellite radio news junkie. Day one.
Finally met a guy today who likes the news as much as I do. We listen to CNN and CNBC over coffee.
Now, isn't that romantic? Day two.
Tonight, he took me to dinner, to the drive-thru, so we could listen to XM in his car. Nothing goes better with a tasty meal than the Fox News Channel and the BBC.
Well, maybe a chocolate milkshake. Day three.
The two of us went out one last time tonight, listening to ABC News and talk, when he decided to switch to a different XM channel. love songs, and I thought you were a true news junkie. I quickly switched it back to C-SPAN Radio and asked him to take me home.
How disappointing. But luckily, she has XM Satellite Radio to cheer her up. Over 120 digital channels of music, news, sports, and talk this year. And all of XM's music channels are 100% commercial-free. Check it out at stores like Best Buy or Circuit City. XM Satellite Radio. Required monthly subscription and hardware sold separately. Activation fee applies.
Randy Rhodes.
If the Clinton era would have continued, right? If we would have had an Al Gore presidency, we would have moved in already to the 21st century, and we would have started with renewable fuels as a new base for employment, as a new base for industry, as a new base for discovery and research and development, and we would have gotten the 21st century economy going.
Randy Rhodes, afternoons 3 to 7 on Air America Radio.
With Sue Ellicott and Mark Maron, I'm Mark Riley on Air America Radio. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia spoke to an audience of high schoolers yesterday. Now, if you're not familiar with Justice Scalia, it just so happens he's the subject of one of Air America's Profiles in Courage. So before we tell you about yesterday's story, first, some background from today's Profile in Courage.
Courage is not a quality we normally associate with the Supreme Court. When you're all-powerful and have a lifetime appointment, you don't really need to be that brave. That's what makes the case of Antonin Scalia so special. First, it takes some courage just to go duck hunting. If those ducks ever decide to turn on you, you could be in trouble. But to go duck hunting with Dick Cheney when you have a case against him pending, well, most judges would consider that a conflict, especially when he's paying your way. But not Justice Scalia. He knows that if he can't hobnob with Republican officials who are being sued in his court, that pretty much eliminates all his friends. So, for having the cojones to stand up for his own unique interpretation of judicial propriety, not to mention the courage to spend the day in the swamp with Dick Cheney and a shotgun, Antonin Scalia is today's Profile in Courage.
Now, Justice Scalia seldom allows his speeches to be recorded. But yesterday, it wasn't until during his speech that the word came down, no taping. So his people demanded that reporters on the scene erase their tapes of the speech. And a deputy federal marshal took a tape recorder from out of a reporter's hands. Fortunately, we have obtained what appears to be an edited partial copy of one tape, in which Scalia appears to be fielding questions from his high school audience.
A bullet that jumped up and bit you. Oh, yes, sir. Bit me directly in the buttocks.
Bubba was my best good friend. And even I know that ain't something you can find just around the corner.
There's an awful lot you can tell about a person by their shoes. Where they gone. Where they been.
Can you please answer the question?
I'm not a smart man. But I know what love is.
That's powerful stuff. It makes me respect the court even more. Because I had no idea they had this sort of simple but very, you know, human logic and understanding of people.
Well, you know, you take all of these people together. You take this White House, you take the Supreme Court, you take all these people together, and you got to be scared to death as to who's running this country.
Well, we know who's running it. I mean, any time you have a Republican-dominated Congress, court appointed.
And a duck-hunting Supreme Court.
Yeah, we've got Republicans basically in the White House, you know, in the Senate, in the House, you know, in the courts.
Yeah, it means the Illuminati is clearly running the planet and the country.
And
there's nowhere to hide. There's nothing to do.
That's what the duck said.
Yeah, right.
I tried. But, you know, the point about not wanting stuff taped is absolutely crucial today. That you know, there is going to be no electronic recording either of President Bush or Dick Cheney's testimony up on Capitol Hill, in the same way that there was none of Condoleezza Rice's four-hour private session with the commission back in February. So, you know, we've had a lot of problems with stuff that's been redacted. Basically, the good stuff, the stuff that's, you know, potentially revealing, has been redacted from transcripts. But in this case, there's not even going to be any transcripts.
I know, dude, though.
And I think it's time not just to have a call to arms. We need a call to shorthand. We need calling all unemployed court stenographers. We need to get that bipartisan panel, the 10 Republicans and Democrats, sequester them overnight and give them a crash course in shorthand.
Yeah.
And they can scribble down notes.
But I got a guy. He's going to be in there, and there are going to be some bootlegs tomorrow. This dude can get you Dead stuff. He can get you some Nirvana stuff. But the Supreme Court stuff he's got, awesome. He's got Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I don't even want to, you know, what she was doing. I mean, I don't even want to, you know, there was, all right, look, I'm just saying I got a guy. That's all I'm saying.
That's hang on, you, Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
But are you not outraged? No transcripts?
I'm outraged. Wait, hold on. Let me find it. Yes, yes. You. Okay. I am outraged that there are no transcripts. What is going on in this country that we can't get transcripts? Would somebody make a call? Because I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore.
Good, that's what I needed. I can turn you down now.
Okay.
Now, there's some other stories happening. You know how President Bush has always portrayed himself as a friend of the military, a friend of people who have gone through changes overseas. I guess in most cases...
Sex changes in Thailand?
Not those kind of changes, deviant. You know, on behalf of the government. Well, the Bush administration yesterday urged an appeals court to overturn a judge's order that would have awarded nearly $1 billion in Iraqi money. And God knows how much that would be in... What is it? Saddam's or drachmas? I don't know what they call it now.
I think they're dollars. No. I think they're called the Halliburtons now. There's the Halliburton single.
I wouldn't be surprised.
The Halliburton 20.
I could give you 20 Enrons.
Can you explain the case to us a little bit, Mark?
All right. The case is that there were 17 Americans who were taken prisoner by Saddam Hussein's government during the last Gulf War.
Okay.
And they sued and they won.
They sued the Iraqi government.
Yes.
Right.
That is actually a bit of a false victory. You don't really want to kind of sue a government that has had all its assets frozen.
Right.
A bit of a problem there, isn't there?
Right. But
at least you can get them.
Right. So, but what is the case in court now? The argument is that it being made that if the French are going to, if they're going to honor French oil contracts, that George Bush is stopping it because he feels like the assets are ours as a country and not these guys?
Well, yeah, he wants to rebuild Iraq with the assets from Iraq.
What about rebuilding these guys' lives? I mean, you know what I mean?
They were tortured. They were starved. They were in really rough shape.
I think they deserve the money.
Well, you think they're going to get it?
I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore.
Well, I don't know that their lawyers don't have a point when they say, this isn't going to hurt the rebuilding of Iraq. This money, one way or the other.
Right?
Yeah.
Right, because there's like $100 billion, $1 trillion to rebuild Iraq.
Yeah, to rebuild Iraq. They passed that through Congress. So what is this little one bill going to do? Or are they going to be, are they really worried about establishing some kind of a precedent here? I don't understand.
They clearly found out these 17 Americans were Democrats.
Ah, that'll do it.
They're not worried about the votes. At this point, you know, they might care about 17 votes and the family members.
Well, they cared about them in Florida, that's for sure. It could be the outcome of the election at stake here. But be that as it may, also, another quick story. 160 years after the fact, Illinois is going to offer Mormons an apology for the persecution they suffered back in the 19th century.
And I'd just like to say on that note, in Chicago, we're on 9:50 a.m., WNTV. clearly, you're probably not Mormon because they kicked you out in 18, whatever it was, and you're in Utah. But if you are listening in Chicago, it's...
Did we ever figure out, was it Brigham Young, John Smith, whichever
Mormon? What?
They moved a little colony of them.
Is he just practicing an apology? He says the apology on my computer here, the apology has made a big splash in Utah. He's just trying out, moving up from regret to apology. And if this works, maybe the country will get some kind of apology about 9/11. Maybe.
Well, they didn't even send the governor. They sent the lieutenant.
We should come back to that story because it really is addressing a cult that got too powerful.
Uh-oh.
Is what it is. Today's Morning Business Report. Here we go. There's some exciting news in the world of war profiteering. Though most of us are unable to reap the dividends of owning a multinational oil or construction company, you can enhance your portfolio with the most dynamic stock in the war industry, private sector soldiering. What's private sector soldiering? It's a vital part of the private security industry. What do we mean by private security industry? The business of international strategic security consultants. Whew. All right, they're mercenaries, but they prefer to be called contractors or assets.
Currently, these assets are serving their corporate masters in more than 50 countries. Already, there's an estimated 15,000 assets in Iraq. When they're not protecting oil derricks and oil executives, they drive around in armored vehicles, letting the locals know that their country has merged with Unocal and Shell. And best of all, when an asset dies, it's a company write-off. You simply can't lose unless your compound is overrun by angry children with RPGs. Send for your private sector soldiering prospectus today.
Definitely an argument for hidden assets.
Absolutely.
But these are often people who have been in the military and who are trained and just making a load more money once they'd left the services, right?
Yeah, the private. I think it's the future, the privatizing of war. And there was an article today that a lot of these mercenaries and these private soldierings have sort of united into a front there so they can communicate better in Iraq.
I saw a Columbo episode about this once. Still ahead, a conversation with a gay Republican who voted for George W. Bush in 2000. Will he do it again? We'll talk to him and to you on the phones as we continue. But first, the news headlines.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. Don't expect a public apology from National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice to the families of the 9/11 victims as she faces a panel investigating the attacks and what the administration knew about terrorism. Rice will appear before the commission this morning at 9. She's expected to immediately give a 20-minute statement purportedly trumpeting the administration's concerns about terrorism before the questioning begins. Stay tuned to Air America Radio for the latest developments and analysis on the Rice appearance before the 9/11 panel. The escalation of violence in Iraq is reportedly having an impact on President Bush and Democratic rivals Senator John Kerry. Both have been forced to answer tough questions about the U.S. occupation. Pentagon is still trying to come up with a fix for problems with military absentee ballots, a report out of the Defense Department's Inspector General's office shows. The problems that plagued the system in the last two national elections still continues. Wayne Gilman, Air America, Radio Network News.
Air America Radio. Because at this time of day, we're the only ones left.
Listen, man, adding fractions is no big deal.
No?
No. You just gotta find what they call the common denominator. Let me show you.
All right.
Now, see these bottom numbers?
Yeah.
These are the denominators. That one's a 4 and that one's an 8.
Mm-hmm.
You just double both of these numbers so that becomes an 8 too. Then you add them up.
Man, you sure make this easy.
Charles Bennett always dreamed that after college he'd return to the old neighborhood as a teacher. But without the money for tuition, only half of his dream came true. He's back in the old neighborhood.
Well, enough math. I gotta deliver these sandwiches.
Oh, sure.
Please support the United Negro College Fund. Call 1-800-332-UNCF. A mind is a terrible thing to waste. A public service brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
I'm Mark Riley with Sue Ellicott and Mark Maron here on Air America Radio. 13 same-sex couples are suing New York State for the right to marry. Current interpretation of state law prohibits issuing marriage licenses to gay and lesbian couples. And this is a story that has been percolating for some time, ever since, I can't remember his first name now, West, Mayor West of New Paltz, married that very large group of people. And many
Jason.
Of the, Jason West, yes. He is, again, at the center of this because many of those 13 couples are, in fact, people he was going to marry. And the state attorney general, Elliot Spitzer, has refused or told the county clerks in the various locations not to issue licenses.
Right.
Because his interpretation is that you can't do that under current law. He has kind of nodded and winked and said, gee, it would be nice if somebody would, you know, test the constitutionality, and now we have it. And
We're testing it.
You pointed out how fascinating it was that one of the people who's a plaintiff in this is an assembly member by the name of Daniel O'Donnell, who just won his seat, I think, in 2002. I remember.
And his lover are part of the lawsuit.
Part of the lawsuit. Long-term he's been with his partner for 23 years, and he is the brother of none other than Rosie O'Donnell.
I just thought it was interesting, and not in a judgmental way, that, you know, what are the odds of a family having, you know, two gay children of both sexes.
Sexes, yeah.
I don't know if it's...
Pretty slim, actually.
I haven't done
a survey. Or maybe out of the closet.
I haven't done a survey. I don't know what the you know, the reports would show, but it's a great and wonderful thing.
I could safely say that the Bush administration is not keeping statistics on that. That is not a survey that will.
I just
will
think it's wild.
Will come up soon.
Isn't it wild? It must have been a very fun household.
Who? The O'Donnells.
I don't want to get into stereotyping anything. I hope that they win the suit.
I do. I hope they win the suit as well.
Nice dodge. Good dodge. Well, we have a guest who might be able to help us out on that question for you, Mark. We have coming up Councilmember David Catania, who's a gay Republican from Washington, D.C., a city council member, and he opposes President Bush's stance on gay marriage. Now, David is a gay Republican who was raising money, is the important past tense, was raising money for Bush's 2004 campaign, and he was a delegate at the 2000 and the 2004 Republican conventions, but he has withdrawn his support for Bush's re-election campaign because he's annoyed, angry, furious with Bush's stance on gay marriage. David, welcome.
Thank you, Sue. Good morning.
Hi,
good
David. Morning.
Welcome.
Hi, Mark.
So what did you actually think of Bush when you met him before? Did he seem a kind of, you know, all-embracing, encompassing, open-minded guy? Or did he not know you were gay?
Well, no, actually, I went to Austin in April of 2000 and led a group of 12 Republicans that met with President Bush before he met with Log Cabin. And it was really... you know, it was a trip that went to see if we could do business with this guy, frankly. And we had a couple of things that we asked for. I mean, now, you know, we're not crazy. We understand that the Republican Party has a long way to go, unfortunately, you know, on issues of tolerance and respect for gay and lesbians. But, you know, we really believe that in a two-party system that, you know, we have to be at the table in both parties, frankly, when our lives are being discussed. And so those of us who went, you know, went with the idea, is there something here? Is there some common ground? And we ask for a few things. We ask that, you know, he appoint or allow an openly gay delegate to speak, which he did with Congressman Colby. We ask that he preserve President Clinton's executive orders on non-discrimination, which at the time was very much in doubt, I have to tell you. And so we were delighted to have that commitment, and we ask that he, you know, hire openly gays and lesbians in top positions in the administration, which he did. You know, now this is 4 years ago. It may seem like not a big deal now, but when no other previous Republican president or nominee would even so much as accept our money, we thought, now this is making some progress. I know as obtuse as it sounds, you know, for those of us who feel we have to be at the table, progress is incremental. And finally, we asked, let's keep the dialogue open, and so long as there's forward progress, you know, we can work with you, because on so many other issues, we happen to agree. And on every point, I must say, he was very supportive and agreeable and had met every one of those commitments.
Do you think he understood what you were saying?
I do. I think we spent about an hour and a half together. And I got to tell you, in my own right here as a member of the local city council, we have, in the early 90s, there was a domestic partnership law passed, which for 11 years we couldn't implement because of congressional and or presidential opposition. And in his first budget that he submitted to Congress, he did not oppose the local expenditure of funds, which meant for the first time in over a decade, we could actually implement our local domestic partnership law.
Now, did Clinton oppose it?
Well, Clinton didn't oppose it, but he sure didn't do anything to implement it. And I got to be honest, and I think it's important that we be fair. And Clinton could have very easily used the power of his presidency to make this happen, and he didn't. But I mean, you know, but I must say, President Clinton was and has been the most important, you know, president in our history on our issues, and so I don't want to diminish him. But I just want to say that President Bush, you know, really made it happen. And so, you know, there was forward progress. That was my point. Not
so what happened in the last 4 years? I mean, you went to his ranch. You stayed there, right? He presumably, and you stayed there with your boyfriend. Is that correct?
Well, we were invited to Crawford to a campaign event. We didn't stay with the president, no, but we were at an event there. And, you know, this was the second time the president had met Brian. And we, I got to tell you, he is so at ease and so comfortable and went out of his way, frankly, to be gracious and to thank me for bringing Brian. And so, you know, herein lies the conundrum. I mean, on a personal level, he could not be on his face more at ease. And then when it comes time to, you know, to run for office a second time when things aren't looking great.
Is he just being schizo or is he being political?
I think he's being political. You know, in my case, I believe that is to be that's a worse offense than being ignorant, which is to be political.
Who's he pandering to?
Well, obviously he's pandering to the radical right. And,
right.
You know, this is a simple calculation. It's an addition and subtraction. And unfortunately, we remain the party, a party building by subtraction. And I think it's a terrible precedent, you know, and it really betrays, if I could, just the promises, not just the ones made in Austin, but the covenant made with the American people to unite us and not divide us. Now, who knows if that's possible, realistically, in a society divided 50-50, Republican, Democrat. But he made the promise, and then at the first opportunity, he used for political gain, he used an opportunity to divide us, and that's regrettable.
How is it?
There's a good cartoon here I saw, actually, in the New Yorker this week, and there's it says, gays and lesbians aren't a threat to the sanctity of my marriage, a woman is saying to another woman. It's all the straight women who sleep with my husband.
Well, you know, I really feel that we're on the right side of history in this country in terms of eventually getting to full equality for gays and lesbians. And, you know, it's regrettable that the president, you know, has abandoned his compassionate conservative agenda by attempting to amend the Constitution, which we all know and have heard a million times is not conservative, and by attempting to exclude a large portion of the people that, you know, he's sworn to serve and defend and protect. From having the same rights and responsibilities as other Americans. Now, well, let me be clear. We all have, you know, gays and lesbians have all the burdens of American citizenship. There are, you know, gays and lesbians in Iraq right now. We certainly pay our share of taxes. We have all the responsibilities, all the burdens, but not necessarily all the benefits.
You know, I might suggest that you move to the UK because the Conservative Party there is taking active steps to include Republicans in the government, and they are going for the gay Conservative vote over in Britain.
Well, you know, I read that recently, and I think that makes perfect sense. And, you know, there are a lot of gays and lesbians who are moderate, you know, in our positions, who are at home within the Republican Party primarily because, you know, we view it as a party of entrepreneurship and opportunity and a smaller government, lower taxes. You know, but what we're fighting in the Republican Party is, you know, is the battle that really began at the birth of the party, which is, you know, when this party was first founded, it was a combination of, among others, I mean, there were some loose Whigs out there, but it was mostly abolitionists, and it was mostly know-nothings. And the know-nothings were the anti-immigrant, anti-Catholics, who were very strong in New England, and they joined forces with the abolitionists, again, from New England and the Plain States. You know, and we've never been able to shake them.
Mm-hmm.
There's always been this tension in this party between a progressive individual freedom, you know, aspect and bigotry. And we have, unfortunately, from time to time, we lose the battle with the know-nothings. And the know-nothings of the 21st century continue to be the radical right. And, you know, they're so bent on having life their way and controlling others that they're really going to tank this party. And I believe, you know, as someone who, you know, represents the entire city, I'm an at-large member, where only 7% of the population is Republican. I know what a one-party system, you know, does to a city or does to a country. And that's why, you know, I believe very much in a two-party system.
Councilman, we have to take a break, but we're going to come back. We're going to have more of Councilman David Catania from Washington, D.C., and we'll let you ask him your questions. Give us a call at 866-303-AAR0. That's 866-303-2270 right here on Air America Radio.
All of a sudden, out of nowhere,
Air America
boom.
Radio.
There was body parts, there was blood, there was chaos.
There was this large flame that just covered at least 100 meters in every direction. Devastating scene.
Men died.
Hey, W. Preempt this.
Dear Calvary Hospital, my husband John was 56 when he was diagnosed with brain cancer. After 2 long years of unanswered wishes and vanished dreams, John was now at the end of his life. We had no idea of how to handle the process of dying. We were terrified and distraught until we went to Calvary Hospital. When John entered Calvary, it was only a matter of days before we saw the difference. Your expert doctors, nurses, technicians, your entire staff gave us the attention we had never had. Medically, emotionally, and spiritually, you taught us how to handle John's death. We weren't afraid anymore. In the last few weeks of John's life, he lived. Yours truly, Lori Hathorne.
This is Frank Calamari, president of Calvary Hospital. Insurance companies do not have the right to deny you Calvary's expert care. In fact, it's the law. So don't be denied. Call us at 718-518-2000 or visit calvaryhospital.org.
Public relations. Monty Python called it a modern, useless profession. Too bad they were wrong. PR has become the way crafty corporations and even the leader of the free world convince people that pollution is harmless, war is peace, and greed is good. No wonder Fenton Communications doesn't like to be asked at parties what we do for a living. But we are proud that we help our clients make the world a better place. We serve MoveOn.org, Air America Radio, the Harvard School of Public Health, the Natural Resources Defense Council, What Would Jesus Drive, Freedom to Marry, and more. With media strategy, advertising, organizational development, and publicity, Fenton Communications has been around for more than 20 years. Based in New York with offices in San Francisco and Washington, D.C. We salute Air America Radio, tackling right-wing hate radio at last. Fenton Communications. Visit us at www.fenton.com. Just don't call us flats.
Planet check. People have the right to the truth, unvarnished, even uncomfortable.
Many people are unfortunately too busy to realize that a lot of their representation in government votes poorly on the environment.
That's Rico Mostradonato from the League of Conservation Voters, the electoral arm of the environmental community.
Much of our environmental protection is at the mercy of elected officials. It's absolutely essential that we have good folks in place that have the mind of protecting our health.
How green is your state?
There are ways to get involved, find out who your representatives are, find out what their voting records are like.
Get the facts by joining the League of Conservation Voters at
www.lcv.org.
That's Planet Check.
Your daily one-minute terrestrial examination.
Planet Check is possible thanks to tadmail.com, where environmentally conscious Americans get their internet access for free. Tadmail.com, helping people and the planet.
The Satellite Sisters.
Martha is back in the news, Liz. Can you believe it?
So what do you make of that?
Well, you know, this has now come up. Martha Stewart's attorney has requested a new trial because one of the jurors, you remember Chappelle Partridge, he was the one that spoke to the public after the trial.
So we call him juror number 8 here at Satellite Sisters. Victory for the little people.
The Satellite Sisters, Sunday morning at 9 on Air America Radio.
I'm Mark Riley with Mark Maron and Sue Ellicott here on Air America Radio. We are speaking live with Republican Washington, D.C. Councilman David Catania. And we're taking your phone calls at 866-303-AAR0. That's 866-303-2270. David Catania, you are a delegate to the 2004 Republican Convention coming up in New York. Given your withdrawal of support for President Bush, what are you going to do at the convention?
Boy, Mark, that's the $64,000 question. At least, from the perspective of some of the party leaders here. I mean, I'm getting. Actually, I've been elected to the platform committee too. Each jurisdiction, each state, and the district each have one man and one woman who serves on the platform committee, which is a largely perfunctory, post where you simply do what you're told, and they're not eager to have independent thinking, I got to tell you. And so there's a real hard push locally to see how, I can be removed from that platform committee. And I suspect if they had their druthers, they'd like me to leave the delegate position as well. And I just don't have any intention to. I really think that parties are made stronger through, responsible, constructive dissent. And, I'm going to do my best to be able to maintain my platform committee post. And I'm certainly going as a delegate. There's no doubt about it. And I've
who's trying to take it away from you? Who's going after you?
We've had some local party leaders who are, and I got to say, half of them are very, very constructive, and they simply want to find the best way out of it. And I've been lucky to have a great local party here who are completely supportive. But there are a couple. I mean, when they get the order from the Home Office, they dutifully try to fulfill it. And there's a lot of pushback on my part. And it's going to be interesting to see if I'm able to get there as a platform committee member.
I would recommend some kind of cabaret act. He couldn't prep something political and, provocative between now and September.
Are they bringing Brian McKnight back from 4 years ago?
Well, maybe The Rock will be coming back. You remember The Rock?
I remember when The Rock was there. Oh, of course.
I don't know how his violent action films play into the, you know, into our family obsessed themes anymore. But they'll figure out some way. I mean, honest to God, they'll figure out some way to rationalize his return or something equally silly.
Hey, David.
Yeah.
Is there a lot of other Republicans that are sort of feeling, disenfranchised by this pandering to the Christian right?
You know, it is absolutely the case. I mean, you know, there's the nose holding, and people are holding their noses, and they're trying to rationalize, you know, because of their support of the president on other issues, why they can continue. And there's kind of this eternal hope. I mean, I like to say that many Republicans are eternal optimists. We continue to think that we're going to return to some of our better practices of the past. But
as you said, it really, on some level, because of the infiltration in all levels of government, is becoming a real threat to democracy.
I absolutely think that. I mean, I think, you know, the radical right in our party is really bent on creating a theocracy in this country. And, I am at a crossroads, really, because at times I'm thinking, you know, what do I need this for? I don't need this aggravation. I can be an independent. But at the same time, I don't want to be pushed out of this party that I've been a part of and my family's been a part of. And it's just, you know, I grew up in a small town in Kansas called Osawatomie, which is the hometown of abolitionist John Brown. I grew up in the John Brown State Park. Being a Republican is who I've been. I mean, Osawatomie is a town of Yankees that came in the 1850s from Connecticut and Massachusetts to fight slavery.
Wow.
David, actually, before we go to a caller, I've got one idea for you about your cabaret act. It's David Catania and the Know-Nothings. It's a kind of satirical parody thing. Work on it. I know some people I could put you in touch with. But
what are the colors going to be?
I'll let you go for that. Like, you're probably, you know, I don't know your palette. But, yeah, some kind of rainbow thing, I think. But before we go to a caller, you said earlier that you will not vote for George Bush this time around. So I'm wondering, you know, who are you going to vote for?
Well, you know, I got to be clear, I'm not going to vote for John Kerry either, because I believe, you know, his stance in Massachusetts is on a state level is equally as indefensible as the president's on a national level.
And so you're not going for Nader, are you?
No.
Okay.
No, you know, I'm waiting for a miracle. I really am.
Dream on.
You know, and I don't recommend this as a strategy for most Americans.
No.
We have to have a president. I certainly understand that, and I can rationalize my vote either way. But you know what? At the end of the day, with Kerry's support of the constitutional amendment in Massachusetts on the state level that came within days of the vote that gave, you know, the Democrats in the legislature the cover to vote for discrimination, I can't feel good about that either.
So would you recommend that all gays withhold their vote from Kerry?
You know,
and
I think people have to make their own decisions. I really do. I mean, I'm a bottom up thinker. I think every person is autonomous and ought to be able to make their own decisions and rationalize their own actions. I'm just saying for me, that's not what I'm about. I'm not going to vote for either of them, and I'm not going to vote for Nader either.
All right.
So we're waiting for a miracle here in Washington.
We're going to take some callers, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
We can find you a cave out in, where are those, Montana, you can hide in.
One of
need
the
to...
square states. I'm used to square states. Grew up in one.
Okay. You ready for some callers, David?
Okay, sure. Where are we going to go to?
Kyle.
Kyle in Virginia. Kyle.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
How you doing?
All right. Man, listen, I enjoy your show. I've listened to it for, I've been home for 2 weeks, and it's been great. But you mentioned about, you know, George Bush being a uniter, not a divider.
A divider, not a uniter.
Yeah, well,
the only thing he's united has Iraq against
exactly, him. Exactly, Mr. Bait and Switch. And the best example I can give is when he went down to the King birthday
and
laid a wreath. And if that wasn't the height of hypocrisy, man, I don't know what is, man, because this cat, as far as I know, he has no civil rights record in his youth or any time. You know, I mean, to me, and I kind of hold Coretta Scott King sort of responsible for that, for letting him do that and use her as a photo op.
All right.
Well, David Catania, what do you say about people who
Thanks, Kyle, who
see hypocrisy in George W. Bush, for example, you know, acting very natural, very cool around you, you know, laying a wreath at the Martin Luther King thing, and his actual policies towards blacks and gays?
Well, you know, that's the issue. I mean, I think the president is himself And I want to be clear, I don't think the president is a bigot, and I don't think the president is a homophobe. I think the president is hostage to, there's a conference room off the West Wing that's full of this radical right element that are telling him unless he does this or that, he can't win. And I think in his mind, he thinks that, he can rationalize anything to stay in power because he views this role of fighting terrorism as central to who he is. And I think he's willing to rationalize anything to keep the position because he thinks that what he's doing on that front is so important and so necessary. And, the issue, though, can I tell you, is one of cognitive dissonance within the administration. I mean, I don't think there's overt insensitivity. I think they don't have a clue.
It's covert. That's even worse.
Well, no, you look at the people, the real decision makers around the table, and they're all middle-aged white men. And so they're asking you, how's your life? Well, mine's fine. How's yours? Mine's fine, too. How do you think this will go over? I think fine. I mean, it's the classic issue. If you don't have someone of race or, of color or someone who is gay or lesbian or women or minorities or people of different perspectives at the table, how do you ever raise the issue? How do you ever be sensitized to the way your policies affect their lives?
David, one sec. We're going to go to Christian in Brooklyn. Christian, do you have a question for Councilmember David Catania, gay Republican from Washington, D.C.?
I've always wondered I'm gay. I'm a lifelong New Yorker, a lifelong Democrat. And I've always wondered how somebody who is gay can in any way support the Republican Party.
Good question. David, can you answer that?
The question is...
Well, I'll tell you that the first civil rights legislation ever introduced in Congress was by a Republican, right? It was by Senator Ed Brooke from Massachusetts in the early 70s who introduced the first legislation that actually would end discrimination against gays and lesbians. I mean, the list can go on. I mean, I really had it with the insensitivity, but just the arrogance of people who say, well, how can you be? I am because I believe it's important that our voice be heard in both parties. I believe it's important that we be at the table when our lives are discussed. It isn't about explaining away or forgiving. It's about working and actively trying to change things to make them better.
But wait a minute, now you cited Ed Brooke, and that's an interesting point because there hasn't been a black Republican in the Senate since Ed Brooke.
Well, I mean, there's only been one black Democrat.
It's like that black baseball player. There's only ever one?
No, you mean the football player.
Okay.
Hey, David.
Yeah, look,
I'm
no,
really
look,
bad
look,
on American
let,
sports.
Let me just say this. That this party, let me just say this, that the Republican Party has a terrible record on civil rights and on issues affecting gays and lesbians and women. And it goes back to the cognitive dissonance I talked about. And that's why we have to fight to get into leadership positions and fight to have our voices heard and change this party. And if we're not successful, we have to make a decision on an individual basis on whether we continue to try to pursue change or whether or not we leave the party.
All right.
David Catania, Republican, gay, councilmember for Washington, D.C., thank you so much for joining us.
Sue, great. Thank you. Mark, thank you. Mark, thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, we appreciate
great
it.
Great talking
bye-bye.
To you.
You bye-bye. Take care.
That's wild that that Bush can rationalize anything to stay in power. Doesn't that imply a tremendous, lack of character and almost, or else just an evil compromise
of conscience?
And
this is one of his people.
I never thought you'd say that.
What?
I didn't realize it's a Jewish baseball player. I get them all these things.
Here we go. My name's Mark, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Mark.
Hello, Mark.
Hi. Today in Recovery Corner, I reach out to a fellow 12-steppers who are struggling to stay clean and sober. Today I'm reaching out to one George W., who is currently isolating in Crawford, Texas. All right, look, man, your friend Condoleezza up there, she's up there lying for you today, buddy. Do you see how your actions affect others? She's scared, man, but she's dealing with it. And look at you. You're hiding out at the ranch. If you're going to stay home, locked away, work your program, dude. You know what to do, okay? First, make a list of all your wrongs. And be honest, George W., you're only as sick as your secrets. Second, make a vigorous attempt to repair the damage you've done. All of it. Just work backwards from this morning. All the way back to that, all the way back to that thing you did to Jeb's toothbrush when you were 7, all right? That was wrong, man, all right? Third, with your newfound knowledge, develop the best possible relations with everyone you know. Try a press conference. Maybe admit some responsibility. It's worked for other presidents, man. I know it's a tall order. It is, okay? You've messed up a lot of stuff. Maybe you should take some time off, like maybe 4 years. That's a good time. Let's jump, okay? Let's start the healing, George W. And just remember, first things first, do the next right thing. Keep it simple. Think. Let go and let God. Oh, yeah.
just to show my age, don't touch that dial. Coming up in our last hour, media critic and author Mark Crispin Miller breaks down the spin cycle on Condoleezza Rice. Air America Radio will be right back.
To be or not to be, that is the question.
Well, actually, for New York's Roundabout Theater Company, whether or not they're going to be is no question at all. Over 800,000 people enjoy their productions every year. And in just the last 10 years, Roundabout has won 15 Tonys and 18 Drama Desk Awards. But the only prize they didn't have was a theater all their own. But that's now changed, thanks in part to a bond issue insured by American Capital Access. The funds raised have helped Roundabout buy Studio 54, the same space where they packed audiences with a five-year run of Cabaret. The building is ideal for Roundabout staging of classic American musicals. And the bonds are pitch perfect for New York investors. They're fully insured by ACA, so they deliver a higher yield without higher risk. And for city residents, they're triple tax exempt. Around this time of year, that makes for savings even your accountant can get theatrical about. To learn more, ask your broker about ACA-insured bonds or visit us at ACA.com.
You're listening to 1190 WLIB New York, the home of Air America Radio.
In the next hour of Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio, U.S. forces drop a bomb on a mosque in Iraq. What? That should play well on Al Jazeera. Plus, would you wear jewelry in your eyeball? But first, here are the headlines at this hour.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. The Bush administration will publicly reveal what it knew about terrorism before the 9/11 attacks this morning. National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice will appear before an independent commission on the attacks, chaired by former Republican Governor Thomas Kane. The appearance comes after months of stonewalling by Rice and the administration, citing executive privilege. Rice is expected to reinforce the administration's stance that it has been tough on terrorism since its inception. Panels expected to ask tough questions regarding statements from critics, including former counterterrorism expert Richard Clark, who worked for both the Bush and Clinton administrations. Presidential historian Alan Lichtman says the Rice appearance is a good thing for the Bush White House.
Now that Condoleezza Rice is testifying, the administration can say we fully cooperated. We gave the commission what it wanted. And frankly, I don't think the risks are all that great.
Presidential historian Alan Lichtman. U.S. military is gearing up for a fresh operation against the rebel Shiite Muslim militia today in Iraq following three consecutive days of some of the deadliest violence since the end of the war. Top U.S. commander says the militia has at least partial control over two southern cities. Lieutenant General Ricardo Sanchez says coalition forces will break that control in what is being called Operation Resolute Sword. Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry says the Bush administration must pinpoint who will be taking over the reins in Iraq, with the June 30th deadline date looming in the background and the signs of violence increasing.
This is one of the most extraordinary situations I've ever seen. You don't set an arbitrary date for the transfer of power to a non-entity.
Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry. Meanwhile, Iraq's interior minister in charge of police and security forces announced he will be resigning, or is resigning as of today, at the request of top U.S. Administrator L. Paul Bremer to maintain the Shiite-Sunni balance in the government. Wayne Gilman.
April 13th at 9, 8 Central.
Don't look so puzzly.
A new series comes to Bravo, showing just how far five parents will go to turn their children into stars.
I have spent anywhere from $15,000 to $20,000.
Showbiz moms and dads.
From your perspective, I'm selling you.
Yes.
Well?
You're cute, but you're not that cute.
The revealing new series, Showbiz Moms and Dads.
And no means whatsoever do I live through my daughter.
Premieres Tuesday, April 13th at 9, 8 Central, only on Bravo.
I am not a stage mom.
Then, once upon a time, there was a little show called Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. But what would it have been like if the Fab Five were a different group of guys?
Oh my God, I'm so scared.
For the first time ever on television, watch the original Queer Eye with the original cast and see how it all began.
Oh my God!
The very first Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, Tuesday, April 13th at 10, 9 Central, after Showbiz Moms and Dads, only on Bravo.
More than two dozen police officers in India have been killed in the landmine attack. Authorities blame the blast on communist guerrillas who are suspected in a similar attack a year ago. Federal investigators today plan to question the crew of the Amtrak train that derailed in Mississippi Tuesday night. They're not speculating on the cause, but they say there's no indication it was anything other than an accident. One woman was killed. An AT&T broadband employee who was fired after refusing to abide by company rules concerning homosexuality has won a federal court case. Albert Buonanno of Denver said language in an employee handbook requiring workers to recognize, respect, and value differences such as sexual orientation violated his religious beliefs. Wayne Gilman on Air America Radio News. And on the 10th anniversary of the slaughter in Rwanda yesterday, U.N. Secretary General Kofi Annan said that the world must be prepared to take decisive action, including the use of force, to prevent genocide from happening again. On Air America Radio Network News.
Air America Radio. We report. You decide. No wait. You decide. We report. Then we pick up our checks. No, hold on. You report. We take a nap. Somebody goes home. I lose my keys. My dog gets sick. Or something like that.
This weekend, it's all about you at the JCPenney Customer Appreciation Sale this Friday and Saturday only. Just in time for Easter, find exceptional savings store-wide. Plus, come in for your bonus scratch-off card and get extra savings of 10, 15, even 20% off sale and clearance prices when you use your JCPenney card. Don't miss the JCPenney Customer Appreciation Sale because you deserve it.
It's all inside.
JCPenney.
Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Sale ends April 10th.
Many women today are not aware that legal abortion in the United States hangs by a 5-4 margin in the Supreme Court. And though Americans overwhelmingly support a woman's right to choose, that right is being eroded every single day. Hi, I'm Kathy Najimy, and this is your wake-up call. I'm a feminist, I believe in a lot of things, and I really believe in reproductive freedom. I'm standing up with women from around the country and around the world, women whose lives are endangered by restricted U.S. policies. Please join me in the March for Women's Lives on April 25th in the nation's capital. We want to make it the biggest protest that Washington, D.C. has ever seen. Now, if you're thinking it's a lot of trouble, get on a bus, get in a car to get to Washington, D.C. to march, think about how much trouble it would be if they took away your right to choose. For more information, go to feminist.org. That's feminist.org. It's time to make some noise, people. I'll see you in Washington.
Mom, can you take me to Supercuts?
Excuse me? Since when do you care what you look like?
Seriously, Mom, I need a haircut.
Is it a girl? Oh, my Lord, you're already into girls. My little boy's growing up. Oh, soon you'll be in college.
Mom, I'm 7.
And then you'll marry this girl, who we haven't even met yet, and be a big corporate executive. Oh, you look so good in a suit.
Are you going to take me to Supercuts, or should I call a cab?
And you'll be bringing the grandkids on the
Let's face it, your kids are growing up whether you like it or not. That's why Supercuts promises to give them a look you'll both love. Usually quicker than it takes to get them to brush their teeth.
Dad, can you take me to Supercuts?
Supercuts? Jeez, where's the time gone? I mean, you were just a little baby, and now you're in school, growing hair.
Supercuts. We know how it is.
With over 1,700 locations, it's never been more convenient to let Supercuts take care of you and your hair. Call 1-800-SUPERCUTS or log on to supercuts.com for a location nearest you. And while you're there, check out the latest episode of The Mop Squad.
Air America Radio. Farther to the left of Fleeted Dockers.
Good morning. I'm Mark Riley, along with Sue Ellicott and Mark Maron, here on Air America Radio. It's 7 minutes past the hour, and this is Morning Edition.
Today, how will the White House spin Condoleezza Rice's testimony? The suspense is exquisite. Plus, should companies be allowed to make people respect gays? That's all ahead. But right now, I've got Sue Ellicott and Mark Maron with me. And as usual, Mark's got something on his mind.
Well, you know, I did the Colin Quinn show last night, Tough Crowd, which I enjoy doing.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the topics was...
As opposed to the shows that you don't like.
Well, you know, there are some, but not. You know, usually I don't do shows I don't like to do. There was one of the topics was pornography and censorship and how they're going to be cracking down on everything. And the only real story I have from my life that I think best really sort of exemplifies censorship, I was doing a show. This isn't that dirty. Chris, the board guy's very good. God, I hope this gets
he's
good.
He's boiled and ready.
No, I was doing a show at Gotham Comedy Club one night, and I get there, and the place had been rented out by a publicity company for the Tanqueray gin. All right? Do you remember the ad campaign with that Mr. Jenkins guy? Right.
The collage guy.
Right. So there's two of those collage guys on signs on either side of the stage. And I before the show, I'm like, I know this is a private event. And the owner was like, look, it's not a private event. There's just most of them are there. And, you know, they paid to have the things put up there. And I'm like, all right, well, I guess that's cool. I would have liked to have gotten paid a little extra. He's like, I'll give you a little extra money. Just do me a favor. Look, you know I would never censor you, right? I would never tell you what to do and what not to do. I just want to tell you that, look, you can make jokes about anything you want. Jesus, you can make jokes about sex, anything you want. All right, just don't say anything bad about Mr. Jenkins. All right, just don't. You know,
I know
don't.
Where this is going.
That's where it's going. That's all censorship is. It's just it's all about honoring the corporate's desire to shut down whatever needs to be shut down. And I didn't say anything bad about Mr. Jenkins.
But
you said Tanqueray gin
but
sucks,
but, right?
Right?
No. There's no but.
Admit it.
Because I think Mr. Jenkins is the savior. There's no buts.
Does he have a guy
it's
in his deck
example.
Chair?
Huh?
Wasn't he the guy who was in his deck chair?
Yeah, he was a guy in the deck chair. But I don't completely understand, why they're cracking down on Howard Stern or on the porn industry or on, I don't understand why all of a sudden now, because it doesn't seem to be the right, I don't know, do you know what their agenda is?
It's like they say in The Godfather, these things have to happen every now and then.
It's all about money, though.
We have to cleanse everything.
Oh, he's trying to make it seem like we're doing something.
Yeah.
You can't stop the porn.
I know you can't, but they like to try.
Yeah, right.
It's like the drug war.
There'll be a whole different kind
of... You can't stop the drug war.
There will be
you can't stop the drugs.
Right. There will be an uprising from the uprisers.
Absolutely.
Always fill that need. Okay, not very good news coming in from Iraq. Shiite militia men are controlling parts of three Iraqi cities, and there's fighting with Sunni Muslims in Fallujah. This is straight off the wires. Iraq's interior minister in charge of police and security forces has announced he's resigning at the request of top U.S. administrator Paul Bremer to maintain the Shiite-Sunni balance in the government. And another U.S. Marine is killed in fighting in Fallujah, according to the military.
God, it's awful, man.
Now, the only thing that's going to take some attention off this during the day, until people pick up the papers tomorrow or look on the net, is Condoleezza Rice's testimony. But it's the lesser of two evils, isn't it?
Well, if you get the two screens going, you can actually see the cause and effect. You have Condoleezza and the war in Iraq.
It could be that split-screen television could end up being the worst possible thing for the Bush administration. Because now they can't cover anything up. Now they can the two worst stories to happen to President Bush this year are happening at the same time.
Hmm. Now, I don't understand. This interior minister resigned apparently because Bremer wanted to maintain a balance between the Shia and the Sunnis. Isn't that kind of like the affirmative action the Bush administration says they don't like? Isn't it the same principle?
I'm just trying to understand here.
It's because he's a Shiite Muslim,
yeah.
And the U.S.-led administration has said that they want a Sunni Muslim.
In that position.
It's affirmative action, you're right.
To maintain balance, religious balance.
To maintain religious balance and try to not have more violence and.
Oh wait a minute!
I love his
eyes are going again.
No,
we said religion.
It's all religion right now.
The interior minister. This was his. He's called Nuri al-Badran. Okay, this is.
Oh, that guy.
This is his quote. He says, "I consider myself to have resigned." Now, if that's not the most perfect quote for someone who was pushed, isn't that great?
Yeah.
I consider myself to have resigned.
Yeah.
Consider yourself
resigned. Well, one of the problems he's had, obviously, is that many of the police that are under his charge have apparently deserted and become followers or worked with or are apparently fighting on behalf of.
They're all in the resistance.
Outsiders.
So he's an ineffective leader of.
Well, he could have been an ineffective Sunni and it'd been no problem.
I'm just trying to
ineffective Shia. He's got to go.
Can you explain to me exactly what's happened? The guy who resigned was in charge of what?
The police and security.
He's security police. He's the interior minister.
Under Bremer. And
cops
he's
and bouncers.
An Iraqi man who is a Sunni Muslim.
Yes. No.
No. He's a Shiite.
And now he's being put out of work or asked to resign.
No, put out of work.
Put out of work. So a Sunni Muslim can take the job.
He might qualify for the federal retraining program that President Bush is.
This can't be a job that any of these guys want right now.
None of them want to be tapped by Paul Bremer, that's for sure. You might as well put a target on your back.
Right.
At this point. I mean, the American people don't realize, I don't think, how the American overseers over there are hated by so many different Iraq. It's the one thing that's brought the Shiites and the Sunnis together is hatred of the Americans.
There was a very interesting report on Slate.com that I was reading yesterday of a British reporter who's there, and you can hear it on the radio as well, about graffiti all over the city. Anti-American graffiti, anti-administration graffiti.
Against the neo-viceroys?
Well, just, you know, harking back, you know, venting their frustration. The fact they don't have electricity, the fact that all this is taking too long. And then apparently the U.S. forces have gone around scribbling over all of this stuff and writing in English, USA good.
Yeah, that helps. But I got to say, in fairness to the Marines that are over there, these guys are targets now. These people are, you know, you're wearing an American uniform, there's a good possibility somebody somewhere is going to shoot at you.
This is the worst of all possible scenarios that's happening.
But it was predictable. Yesterday, if anybody's in New York, anybody listening on 1190 AM WLIB, if you're in New York, there's a very good photo show up at the International Center of Photography right now, and it covers the war, the period of war last year, and there are many photographs of U.S. Marines and forces during the actual battle period of the war. And there's a very interesting piece of writing by one of the photojournalists who's covered wars around the world for 20 years. And he says in all of those 2 decades of covering wars and conflicts, he's never been in a war situation where he felt that the liberators, the so-called liberated, did not feel liberated. He says, here all I could feel was the conqueror. I could see it in the Iraqi faces. I could feel it in their ways. I could see it in their eyes. This was going to be a different war. He says the problem that he felt was that he was constantly being asked to interpret the culture to the American forces, that they were trained to go in and hate the people there, that they did. There was a huge cultural misunderstanding. And in the soldiers' hearts, he writes, the cause was just. They were here to defend freedom. They had been taught that since September 11th, the Iraqis, they hate us, or Arabs hate us, because we love freedom. And this is how you conquer a nation, they were told. He said, the problem is that you cannot force them to like us or to be like us, and that not everybody wants to be an American. And there's a huge, you know, cultural misunderstanding. It was inevitable with that kind of lack of, you know, emotional or kind of cultural connection between the Iraqi people. You should see some of these photographs of you know, Marines in uniforms, huge tanks, you know, going inside Iraqi homes to look for members of the resistance, and the looks on women and children's faces. It was a recipe for disaster. There was no sense from these photographs of people welcoming people into their homes. They look panic-stricken.
Remember that old song?
Because there's a tank in their living room?
Honey, there's a tank in the fridge.
You remember that old song, I'm Gonna Make You Love Me? That's what
never
really
works, does it?
No, never does. Still ahead, the governator doesn't like strange bills. We don't know what he's talking about either, but hey, we didn't elect him. Plus, from Louisville to London, we take your phone calls. We're Air America Radio, and we value your business.
California, here we come. Right back where we started from. Those hustlers, grab your guns. Your shadow ain't the sun.
Air America Radio. Radio this fun can't be good for you.
An XM satellite radio listener gets commercial-free music day one. Spend time listening to all of XM's music channels today, especially jazz and hip-hop. Not a single commercial break, so I couldn't call my girlfriend Allison.
Allison versus XM, day two.
Woke up with head on table next to XM radio. Ears felt good, but neck was a little stiff. Spent 12 straight hours listening to commercial-free punk rock channel. Forgot to call Allison again. We'll send flowers tomorrow.
XM 1, Allison 0, day 6.
4 voicemails from Allison. We'll call her back after Springsteen Marathon.
I'm rooting for you, Allison. Day 12.
Allison called, said if I'm not dead, we're through. We'll call her back just as soon as they break for a commercial.
Don't hold your breath, Allison, because all of XM's music channels are 100% commercial-free. And this year, you get over 120 digital channels of music, news, sports, and talk. Check it out at stores like Best Buy and Circuit City. XM Satellite Radio. Required monthly subscription and hardware sold separately. Activation fee applies.
Sarah, We'll have to move the piano. Mom's just not going to be able to get around in that room.
I know, in the kitchen. What do we do with the stove and knives and all that stuff that could be dangerous?
Yeah, what about the locks on the doors, too, so she can't wander out? I sure wish there was some place to call to find out what else we should do.
Me too.
If you're caring for a loved one who's suffering from Alzheimer's disease, there is something you can do to get more information. The National Institute on Aging has prepared a kit, especially for caregivers of Alzheimer's patients. You can get the free caregiver's kit just by calling 1-800-438-4380. It'll show you how to make your house safer for someone with Alzheimer's disease. Just call 1-800-438-4380.
There are so many questions. How will we ever make her feel at home?
Don't forget us, David. We'll be affected, too.
Call 1-800-438-4380 for your free caregiver's kit. This is a service of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
The Public Theater in New York presents a play written and directed by Tim Robbins, Embedded.
A savagely witty, very smart, very screwball, and ultimately very chilling comedy.
San Francisco Chronicle.
Embedded.
Wildly entertaining. You'll find more truth about war on this stage than you'll find in most newspapers.
BBC.
Embedded.
Poisonous.
Who's that from?
The New Republic.
Whoa.
Embedded.
Savagely witty and incisive, uncompromising.
LA Times.
Embedded.
Swift, savage, sharply clever lampoon.
New York Star Ledger.
Embedded.
Bad taste.
Who's that from?
Fox News.
Whoa.
Embedded.
Excellent, timely, and compellingly cutting satire, a tribute to the finest traditions of drama and political comedy.
Democracy Now.
Embedded by Tim Robbins at the Public Theater.
212-239-6200.
Order tickets now.
212-239-6200.
Order tickets now.
212-239-6200.
Randy Rhodes.
If the Clinton era would have continued, right? If we would have had an Al Gore presidency, we would have moved in already to the 21st century, and we would have started with renewable fuels as a new base for employment, as a new base for industry, as a new base for discovery and research and development, and we would have gotten a 21st century economy going.
Randy Rhodes, afternoons 3 to 7 on Air America Radio.
Mark Maron back here on Morning Sedition on Air America with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott. And right now, Mark Crispin Miller, a professor of media studies at NYU, is going to help us look through the fog of spin surrounding Condi Rice's testimony. He joins us now in the studio. Mark Miller, how are you, sir?
How you doing?
It's good to see you, man.
Good to see you all.
I want to personally, you know, thank you for keeping me on your mailing list for the last 2 years. If it weren't for you, I would not be educated in terms of almost anything that's going on in the world.
But you'd be a lot happier.
No. I love it. I look forward to it.
Okay.
So how are they going to spin Condi's testimony today?
How are they going to? How have they been spinning it? You know, the fact that they are spinning it.
The countdown to Condi.
No, it's will Condi break?
Right.
Get it?
Yeah.
No, all the coverage so far has been meta coverage.
Yeah.
You know, the White House is discussing the question of what tone she should strike.
Meta coverage. Can you flesh that out?
Coverage about coverage.
Okay.
You know, it's
coverage about coverage about coverage.
Yeah. This is postmodern politics. I have my fingers up to make quote marks.
I do. All right.
Yesterday's Times had a front page piece about her tone. Her tone is being debated in the White House.
We thought she should do it like this. Hello.
Some people thought she should use a funny voice. And
yeah.
No, I mean, this, if she were going to tell the truth and if the emphasis were on the substance of her testimony, this wouldn't be an issue.
Right.
It's unimaginable to me that at any other comparable moment in American history, the news would have foregrounded the question of what tone is she going to strike. That seems to me to be a tacit admission that she's lying.
Exactly. I mean, even if they'd allowed, if they hadn't stalled so long on putting her up there, it wouldn't even be an issue now, let alone in history. If they'd done this a week ago or 2 weeks ago, it wouldn't have nearly the attention that it has now.
Well, how about the fact that this entire commission almost didn't come to be because this administration was working extremely hard to prevent it from happening from day one.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that never made it to the spotlight of the top of the hour or over the fold, but their efforts to squelch and then to cripple this commission have been mighty, have been prodigious. That strikes me as information that the American people ought to know, because I can't imagine why they would want to squelch a commission like this after the most horrific attack on U.S. soil in our history, unless they had stuff that they wanted to hide.
Well, gosh.
Did I go too far there?
No. You can never go too far on this network. I mean, it's very interesting what you're saying, is that the media now represents a different entity other than the truth at all. That there is no real, you're just getting, you know, spin upon spin, this whole meta idea. So how does the truth get out in culture today, outside of your email list?
You mean it's not just that?
No, it's all of it. That's all it is for me, man.
Oh, no, the truth gets out almost as if by accident. I mean, mm-hmm. It's funny how much people do know, despite the fact that for most Americans, the news is a matter of coming home from work, you're exhausted, you got to put the kids to bed. What do? You glance at your daily paper, which is in most cases mediocre at best.
Or right. If you flick on CNN headline news.
Right, or you watch Fox, which has been proven to leave you dumber than you were when you sat down to watch it.
Scary.
But angrier.
Angrier.
And worked up.
And more fun.
Yeah.
Despite all that, you know, people do still in this country have other connections to the world. They have family, they have friends, they go to church. The military community, for example, is a good case for discussion, because while a lot of the troops who are getting ready to go over to Iraq still rate Bush pretty high, the ones who've seen combat and the military families rate Bush very low. And people talk, right? And this is how,
right.
I mean, in the Vietnam War, you know, the reason people turned against the war was not because Walter Cronkite decided to get ironic suddenly about it. You know, that's what the right thing.
Oh, he decided to get ironic?
He decided to get ironic, and he cocked his eyebrows meaningfully, and everybody I'm against the war.
Which is hopeless on radio. Let me tell you, I've been cocking my eyebrows all week. It's totally useless.
Sometimes you can hear it.
You can? Yeah. Like that? Yeah. But I haven't oiled them.
I got to ask you something. You teach at NYU.
Yeah.
A university that had the good sense to put me out after my sophomore year.
Oh.
I had nothing to do with it.
I know. It was before your time. But you come in contact, obviously, with a lot of students, a lot of young people.
Right.
Young people, by and large, do not vote. They are the least in terms of demographic numbers. Their participation is the lowest of any demographic group. Are they more interested about this election as a result of some of the coverage? Are they following the coverage? And do you think more of them will come out and vote? The kids that are in your classes, do they say, I'm going out in November?
Well, the kids in my classes say they're going to go out in November.
But they'll say anything you want them to.
Yeah, right.
They're great. The all-important.
They also say they understand meta.
They're going for extra credit.
You mean on The Sopranos? But and the standard, too.
But I'm living up by Columbia University right now, and as I walk down Broadway... Up
you can't talk about Columbia University.
Well, it's okay.
No, come on.
But, you know, it's the same around NYU or any campuses I visited. That, you know, within the walking distance, everything is pretty much Starbucks, coffee shop, ice cream. Why can't we have voter registration at those places? That would get young people out, wouldn't it?
When young people hear what's going down, changes their views of their own political activism.
Right on.
Completely. That Jefferson said it, and he was right about that. When people know what's going on.
I like going down. I like that.
You know, I've been resisting that.
That was George Jefferson.
I was old school.
I was afraid it was going to date me.
Yeah, no, but I said right on in response.
That's true. Okay, let's.
That's right, Jefferson. Go ahead.
Let's take it to the man.
Yeah, man.
We're very open minded.
What were we saying about Jefferson,
though?
Huh? About Jefferson.
What about him?
I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No. Oh, yeah, Jefferson. Well, I mean, the framers generally believed that freedom of the press was the crucial element to keep any modern civilized nation from becoming tyrannized by a dictatorship or an oligarchy or the, you know, the multitudes. If people know what's happening, if the government is not their sole source of information, then they will probably make the right decision.
So do you think that your students are more motivated to vote this year than they were, say, in 2000?
Well, yeah, because we see in my classes, we happen to discuss propaganda technique, you know, it really irrespective of party. But you also, you know, once you reacquaint them with the facts of math and history, it dawns on them. They also read some news coverage that doesn't make it into the, you know, Times. It dawns on them that they could very easily be carrying a big backpack and an automatic rifle in Iraq.
You right.
There's a draft now for linguists and computer programmers.
All right, Mark, I got to go to this this piece right here. Thank you for talking to us, Mark Christian Miller. And buy the book, the new book. What's that called?
Cruel and Unusual, Bush-Cheney's New World Order.
And also the Bush Dyslexicon, both great, great books. Right now it's time for Countdown to Communion. It's T-minus 3 days until Easter Sunday. Time is running out for John Kerry. As you've heard, he's having trouble finding a Catholic priest willing to give him communion because of his permissive views on abortion. The Kerry campaign is getting desperate. The importance of this ritual cannot be overstated. Even though millions of Catholics haven't been to Mass since Christmas 1982, they prefer their leaders make a public display of the faith they neglect. If you're a priest and willing to risk a papal reprimand, please contact... Is it papal? Papal?
No, it's papal.
Papal reprimand. Please contact Team Kerry by giving communion. You can help Kerry with this photo op avoid spending his... You can help Kerry with this photo op avoid spending his eternity in hell with George Bush. Man, I got to clear up the writing on some of these things.
But it
was perfect.
It is Snapple, though.
It was perfect.
Absolutely. Coming up, a court says it's okay to hate on gays and eyeball jewelry? Oh, and by the way, you on the phones, but first, a quick check of the headlines on the half hour.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman, the chairman of the panel investigating 9/11 promises difficult but fair questions. For National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice, she'll testify under oath and in the public spotlight this morning about the White House's views on terrorism before the attacks. Top U.S. commander in Iraq says he expects the security situation to improve in Fallujah in the days ahead, following the military to move on with reconstruction work. Lieutenant General Ricardo Sanchez also says coalition forces are mounting a fresh campaign against a Shiite Muslim militia. U.S. Marines have called for more airstrikes to put down the second day of a rebellion around a mosque in Fallujah. Thousands of Iraqis paraded relief supplies from Baghdad to the western city. Some are being allowed in. Meantime, another Marine has been killed in the fighting. And a Palestinian official is calling for international aid to rebuild the Gaza Strip if Israel makes good on its pledge to withdraw from the territory. Palestinian foreign minister is due to meet with top U.S. officials later this month to make the request. Wayne Gilman, Air America Radio News.
Air America Radio, where soldiers are American idols.
Hi, I'm Joe Perry.
I'm Steven Tyler from Aerosmith, here for RAD. Recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Yeah, you know we love it when the music does the talking.
And you know, the music stops when someone gets killed.
So never, 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 never let someone you know get behind the wheel if they've been drinking.
And they don't have to be plastered to kill someone. Even one or two drinks can impair your judgment and change your life forever.
So keep it real, keep it real. Friends, don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAB, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Thank you. I'm Sue Ellicott on Air America with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Hello.
Okay. Hello, hello, hello.
Hello.
Hello. Yeah, we've been here for a while. Hello, everybody else.
But there's some people that are just turning it on and going, hello. Hey, what is this?
Okay.
It's Air America.
It's America, Air America, with the latest in from Iraq. 8 Koreans and 3 Japanese are reported kidnapped by insurgents in Iraq. And the Arabic TV station Al Jazeera has aired a video of the Japanese blindfolded. Now, this comes in a week after we've already had reports of one killed Ukrainian. We've had kind of killed and injured Poles. We've had Spanish, Italians, Bulgarians.
Equal opportunity killers.
Yes, equal opportunity kind of anger, I think, towards the kind of unraveling, limited sense of security in Iraq. This is going to be big. I'm sorry. This is not going to. This is not going to play very well. I mean, already the allies' support has been very fragile in the last few weeks. I mean, I haven't seen any British soldiers killed yet, and they were the strongest ally for the Americans in the going to war in Iraq. But this is significant. This is affecting countries all around the world.
Okay, now can somebody answer me a question?
Maybe.
The Japanese have a small group of ground troops that are in Iraq helping to rebuild the country.
Yeah.
Apparently, the people that kidnapped the Japanese have a problem with that. But what's up with the South Koreans?
What do you mean, what's up with the South Koreans?
Why'd they kidnap them? They kidnapped the Japanese for a specific reason.
They did?
They said they're going to burn them unless the Japanese ground troops leave. That's why they kidnapped them. But why did they kidnap the South Koreans?
But they
I don't know if
making,
you know, I don't know if people could walk around with a kind of flag on their uniform or on their outfits, you know, advertising which country they're from. I mean,
are you saying they all kind of look the same?
They look Asian, and they captured them. I don't know that many people.
No, these folks know what they're doing. They're quoting here: 3 of your sons, not 11, but 3, have fallen into our hands. We offer you 2 choices: either pull out your forces, or we will burn them alive.
But you don't think they're addressing all of the Allied forces?
No.
I think it's partly intimidation of Japan. I think this is the first time that Japanese have put any troops in on active duty in any war since World War II. This was a big deal for the Japanese to accept that their government sent troops in. So it's a deliberate intimidation to try to kind of unravel one of the reluctant allies in the coalition.
Do you think they were that... They were that aware of this that they knew that they, you don't think it was after the fact they kidnapped these guys and said where are you from, and then they said Japan? You think they actually said they're the Japanese ones, we're going to go after them? And because,
well, know, if they were troops, they'd be in uniform, so they'd probably be able certainly they'd know. I don't know that there are any Koreans in uniform inside Iraq.
I don't know. It's all about getting anybody. I think there were reports
yesterday
or earlier about some U.S. Soldiers that were being held. I'm not sure that was confirmed.
Yeah, that was.
This is all about getting. Yeah. This is all about getting TV images internationally.
Right, grabbing
of
anybody.
Captured U.S. allies. I think that it just probably so happened that they managed to get 8 Koreans and 3 Japanese.
Right,
I mean, believe me,
base.
If they could have got Poles or Salvadorans or Bulgarians, they would have got them.
That's the point I was
and
trying to
might,
make.
Yeah,
is that they're just
happen.
Grabbing them randomly and then saying, where are you from, and then going after them.
You know, it's a beautiful moment, Mark, because we're agreeing.
Yeah.
Mark Maron and I are agreeing.
Ooh, woo. Alert the media.
Sit down, folks. Okay, there's some other weird stories around today. Did anybody else see that thing on the wires about surgeons in the Netherlands figuring out how to insert some little piece of jewelry inside the
cornea?
Actually, in the eyeball.
Like
in the white
yeah.
part of the eye.
Yeah.
And the people are paying the equivalent of hundreds of dollars for this new fad.
Hundreds of dollars that something will later will become, you know, obstructive and cancerous.
Send them to Texas. They got that guy that pulled his eyeball out. They can be an easy job.
Yeah.
I just thought that's weird.
The
surgeon I saw quoted says, saying, this is a kind of fun thing, a kind of, you know, nice personal thing to do for yourself. It's like... get a life.
But it's such a weird sort of line that one has to cross between, you know, hey, that's cool, and like, what's wrong with you? You know, why would you do, like, you know, with tattoos as well. It's sort of like, you know, it's a real fine line between, like, you know, that's a cool tattoo, and like, what are you, stupid? That's never going to come off.
It does seem a little bit odd, doesn't it? Let's face it. But maybe these people have more money than sense. I would say that.
They just want to do something new. They're bored, and, you know, they have nothing better to do, perhaps.
Okay. Well, here's my favorite story of the day. There was a $10 million prize to the first person who can come up with a rocket that will be able to take three people 62.5 miles above the Earth and manage to do it a second time again within 2 weeks. I guess that's to prove that this thing actually works. And it can only carry, or it must be able to carry, three people. Now, my favorite three people, I think Cheney has to be on it, right?
Okay.
Cheney's just number one. And then I was kind of umming and ahhing, and I think maybe it has to be Ashcroft and Rumsfeld. Because the thing is, I think Bush, if you got rid of those three people, he would basically be disarmed.
He would sit alone and cry.
Anybody? Any
addition
other,
by subtraction.
Three other favorite people to be on the rocket?
How come I can't?
Where I'm distracted.
I want to go on the ride.
Condi?
Condi on the rocket?
Wait, I don't understand the point of the rocket.
It's a...
Is it like some sort of science fair?
Like a
dare, sort of,
it sounds like.
But, like, I mean, they want to design a rocket that goes up to a certain...
No, it's all part of this, you know, trying to kind of launch a manned craft. To be able to make...
I thought we did that years ago.
No, it's to make it affordable for the public. It's a kind of a long-term goal to make it possible for...
To make space travel affordable for the public?
Yeah.
Without costing $20 million?
Exactly. In fact, that guy, it's what he was called, Tito, the guy who did play, he's partly coming up with this money. Tom Hanks is coming up with some of the money. There's a group of people who are coming up with this $10 million prize.
So they'll offer it like sort of like, you want to spend a weekend in space? Well, you can.
Well, we could go, I guess, the three of us. We could do Air America from outer space.
Can we get cleared at the airport, though?
This 3 hours in the morning is just plenty of time.
It's plenty of time to be in space, that's for sure.
No, right. I'd love to go to space with you. I'd love to. I'd like to go to space with you, too,
Mark.
Thought
you already had, actually.
Aren't we in space? Doesn't it feel like that?
It feels like that.
Like, we come in here at night, and then we go out, and it's daytime, and it feels like we've just, like, exited the capsule. Oh, my God, everyone's here. It's a strange planet.
Does somebody have a copy of The Blue Danube so we can kind of 2001 our way through this?
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to act like I know what you're talking about.
I'm sorry, I forgot you didn't watch movies back then.
What is the blue from 2001?
Yeah,
the Blue Danube. Okay, so I'm being you know, culturally unsophisticated.
It's the Stanley Kubrick.
Yeah.
It's the music.
Yeah,
it's
the music when they describe weightlessness.
But all those things that look like your kids' science projects at school are floating around. It's such, you know, now with special effects, it looks so cheesy.
It looks pretty good though. I mean, I watched it recently. I think it looks pretty good.
I think it looks like kind of first grade egg carton.
Still doesn't have a plot, no matter how it.
I think the effects that he got by moving the camera around and turning things, I thought it still holds up as being, you know, really, really brilliant. And I didn't look at me. Now I'm disagreeing with you.
That was a post-substance viewing of the movie.
Yeah, and I still think it holds up. I think it's a beautiful movie. And I know the song. I just didn't know the name of it, all right? So there.
All right. I apologize for jumping on you. It's all right.
But so, can you waltz?
Are we going to callers yet?
No.
Not yet? No.
Are we?
Dang
oh,
it.
Wait a minute. I don't know.
No, not yet. Hey, let's talk about the Mormon story. We didn't really get to that, and I kind of want to talk about the Mormons being, you know, forced out of Illinois. But I read the article, and it's a very interesting thing that they had this. They set up a city, a Mormon enclave on
in
the
Illinois.
Coast of the Mississippi. They actually created space for themselves, and apparently they got too much power within the local economy. You know, and they said, "Well, let's get rid of the freaks."
That's not really the reason.
It isn't.
Mormons hated the blues. You can't live in Chicago.
They didn't like the music.
That's right.
But then they pushed them out to Utah, and Utah is built on
Mormonism.
Have you ever been there to Salt Lake City?
No.
It's literally like a little theocracy. It's amazing. Everything closes at like, you know, 4 in the afternoon or something. You can't drink.
And every college kid says they won't have sex until after marriage.
I actually did a Jewish community center gig in Salt Lake City, Utah. What are the odds? This small little...
And two people came?
Well, there is actually a small little enclave of Jews.
Wasn't Roseanne born out there?
What's that, Mark?
Wasn't Roseanne from Utah or from somewhere out there?
Roseanne Barr?
I think
she was from Utah.
Yeah.
But it was very interesting because you could just tell that they're like, oh, my God, it's an event. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it definitely has a weird vibe in Salt Lake City.
Okay, guys, there's one quick thing we have to just correct. We said before that the Japanese who were kidnapped in Iraq today were soldiers, and they were not.
That was my fault, actually.
I'm only glad it wasn't mine.
I take full responsibility.
Take it like a man, Mark Riley.
That's right. I messed up, all right? Sue me.
Oh, yeah, do. That'll be great. We're waiting for our first suit. Okay, who knows this thing about Arnold Schwarzenegger? He wants part-time legislators in Sacramento, right? So he thinks people should only be working half the day because there are too many strange bills because all these people have too much time on their hands.
But he didn't go into that. He didn't say what a strange bill was.
Mark Wright, you know what's going on?
I know what's going on. I definitely know.
But it's one paragraph.
This is part two. Oh. Arnold Schwarzenegger had proposed actually modifying the Capitol building in Sacramento to accommodate smokers, because right now it's in violation of the ban against smoking in the state. So if people are busy and if they, you know, if they're only working part-time, that opens up the time for Arnold and his friends to go in the Capitol building and smoke.
Is Arnold a big smoker?
Oh, to smoke cigars.
He's a huge cigar.
We'll smoke. I will legislate everything in smoke.
That's right.
Well,
Mr. Cohiba.
I am the only legislator.
Can't he just drive around in his Hummer and dangle it out of the window?
What is Hummer?
His cigar, boys.
When we come back, Mark will have today's liberal agenda, so get your pen and paper ready for your marching orders. Plus, we'll take your phone calls at 866-303-AAR0. That's 866-303-2270 right here on Air America Radio.
Air America Radio. If you know what's good for you.
Welcome to Classes on Tape.
Okay.
Let's begin. Open your color-coded guidebooks to the yellow section.
Yellow.
Encouraging phrases. Ready?
Oh, wait. I don't have my...
Now, repeat the following phrase. Son, you did great on that test.
Son?
I'm so proud of you.
Oh, son, you did great on that test.
How did you do? Try it again.
Son, you did great on...
Again.
Son, you did great
again.
On that... Look, wait. Son, you did great on that test. I'm so proud of you. Son, you did great on that test. I'm so proud of you.
Hey, Dad. How's it going?
Son, you're so proud. And that's a great test.
It's really not that difficult. In fact, encouraging your kids to stay in school is something every parent can do. Talk to them. Encourage them. Get them to graduate. Don't drop out on your kids. For a free brochure, call 877-4KID. That's 877-F-O-R-A-K-I-D. This message brought to you by the U.S.
Sarah, we'll have to move the piano. Mom's just not going to be able to get around in that room.
I know, in the kitchen. What do we do with the stove and knives and all that stuff that could be dangerous?
Yeah, what about the locks on the doors, too, so she can't wander out? I sure wish there was some place to call to find out what else we should do.
Me too.
If you're caring for a loved one who's suffering from Alzheimer's disease, there is something you can do to get more information. The National Institute on Aging has prepared a kit, especially for caregivers of Alzheimer's patients. You can get the free caregiver's kit just by calling 1-800-438-4380. It'll show you how to make your house safer for someone with Alzheimer's disease. Just call 1-800-438-4380.
There are so many questions. How will we ever make her feel at home?
Don't forget us, David. We'll be affected, too.
Call 1-800-438-4380 for your free caregiver's kit. This is a service of the U.S.
Introducing Venture Magazine, the progressive voice for the next generation of market makers. Hi, I'm Kevin Halloran, publisher of Venture, the magazine of risk and reward, where opportunity is seized on every page and where new ideas spring to life. For a free trial issue of Venture, call 866-MY-ISSUE and learn how Samsung steps into the cool as a serious threat to Sony, or how the hidden wealth of Vietnam may fuel the best investment opportunity of the year. In this issue of Venture, you'll discover the emergence of nanotechnology and separate science fact from fiction. Experience intimacy in the City of Angels at the Frank Gehry Design Disney Hall and enjoy the new American splendor. For those who have achieved, those who desire to succeed, and those who dream, Venture is your magazine. Call 866-MY-ISSUE to start your subscription or learn about employment, investment, and partnership opportunities. And remember, in business and in life, always Venture.
Air America's Unfiltered.
I got to retrain myself to not be awake in the 2 to 5 hours a.m. So that's all.
Liz Winstead, Chuck D, and Rachel Maddow.
Is that when you're most creative?
Yes.
Oh, man.
1 to 5.
1 to 5, and then that's it.
No, that ain't it.
Air America's Unfiltered. Weekdays 9 to noon on Air America Radio.
Hey, it's Mark Maron here with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley on Air America Radio. We're taking your calls, so please call 1-866-303-2270, 1-866-303-AAR0. Right now, we're going to talk to Cheryl in Chicago. Cheryl, what's on your mind?
Hi, Cheryl.
Hello, hello.
How are you?
I'm doing very good.
Oh, good.
And I'm so impressed with your recovery corner.
Oh, thank you.
And being a person in recovery myself, I've kind of watched our boy George.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually is not in recovery. He's not a 12-stepper.
Uh-huh.
He did have the, you know, the big Christian, you know,
revelation yes,
and everything
yes.
like that, but didn't really quite do the work.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think that's why I'm reaching out. As someone who's in recovery as well, I wanted to reach out to our boy George and try and get him back on track.
Cheryl, how do you know he's not a 12-stepper?
Just from reading a lot of the background that he said, like even on Oprah back during the 2000 campaign, you know, he just had the Christian revelation and everything. And didn't really think he needed to do the whole 12-step thing.
I don't think he could admit to it, even if he were, only in the sense that so many people sort of misview people in 12-step programs as being, you know, sick or not in control. To admit you're an alcoholic to some people is an admission of weakness. But I think politically he was sort of stuck with that.
Yeah. But when you think, you know, that just explains his behavior.
Absolutely.
Black and white thinking. And
absolutely.
You know, not thinking the drink through, meaning Iraq is, you know, kind of one of his drinks.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is what I don't understand, though. I think, you know, America, compared with so many other countries, is the country of second chances, that you can admit pretty much anything and say that you've changed and that you've moved on. And, you know, everybody forgives everything here. So.
Oh, sure. And,
except
and,
for Bill Clinton, apparently.
Yeah.
Well, I was about to say, Bill Clinton had, you know, publicly, you know, said, okay, you know, after everything, I did do something wrong. And, I, you know, and it was like, people loved him all the more
since
he finally said that, you know.
Hey,
but
Cheryl,
are
you listening on 950 AM?
I'm listening on the net.
Oh, okay.
On the net. Cheryl, thank you so much for the phone call.
Oh, thank you. And I love your program, and keep going at it. It's just a godsend.
Oh,
well,
thank you so much. Great talking to you.
Let's go next to David, who's also calling us from the Windy City of Chicago. David, good morning.
Good morning, folks.
How you doing?
Mm-hmm. I'm wonderful. I love your program because you help me sharpen up my debating tools.
Uh-oh.
You folks help crystallize all of my thoughts and helping me understand what is wrong with liberals and Democrats in general in this country.
Mm-hmm.
You are a refreshing alternative to Republican conservative talk radio because those folks do a great job of preaching to the choir. So,
okay, David, you're hired, okay?
Yeah, right?
You're
check
hired.
In the mail.
Yep.
So are you a convert? Is that what you're telling us?
No, absolutely not.
Hardly.
The point is it's refreshing to hear something other than what you believe day in and day out.
Right, right.
So do you have a question for us?
The question is, if you folks love socialism, please move.
Uh-huh.
You know,
is that a question?
Wait a minute. Did someone say we love socialism?
You guys are preaching it 24/7.
When?
How is that? How is that? Explain when. Give us an example. No. Give us an example of what the three of us have said that advocated socialism.
You folks all love higher taxes, so I insist.
But we didn't say anything about higher taxes. That's only for you, not for us. When did we say something about higher taxes? Give us an example.
I'm speaking about your airwaves in general.
Oh, you're not talking about us in particular.
Well, I presume that you folks toe the party line, which is...
Well, why would you presume that? That's pretty presumptuous, isn't it?
So you're just generalizing?
We don't know you. We don't know what part of the party line you follow.
Thanks a lot,
man.
Thank
you,
David. Well, thanks a lot. We appreciate it. And,
okay.
And we're going to continue to sharpen up your debating skills.
Just by towing his party line, that's how he sharpened his debating skills.
Right.
Making, you know, assumptions based on stereotypes and just going like, you guys are all, you know, communists.
How about we go to Doris?
Doris, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
She's in Nyack, New York. I love Nyack. It's so beautiful.
Yeah, it is.
Hmm.
Well,
what's on your mind, Doris?
Pay the taxes here. I want to talk to Mark. I think Mark's hilarious, but... I think this problem with the – I'm an atheist, by the way, but I think there's a big problem on the left.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we also need to claim God on a level. And I think you have to look at the history of the civil rights movement and a lot of, you know, people, leaders like Martin Luther King. And right now there's a lot of resentment even on the left, you know, the faith-based left, you know, organizations like Fellowship of Reconciliation who've done amazing work, you know, in the anti-war movement. So it's a problem. How do you, I mean, you know, it's easy to dismiss it glibly and
well,
very funny, but what do you think?
I believe that there's a lot of, you know, lessons and obviously ethical principles and human behavior that was, you know, written about, you know, that comes from the Gospels and comes from the Old Testament. And I believe that all of the wisdom that is within those books is relevant and important to the real liberal agenda, but I don't see how it has to be always associated with a myth of God.
Okay. But on the other hand, that's fine. But it seems like you're also sort of discounting and dismissing very quickly people who do have faith. And I think that there is a place for that. I mean, if you look at all these, I mean, if you look at the four nuns that were killed in, where was it? Was it El Salvador?
Right.
I mean, if you look at that kind of tradition, and, you know, I mean, see a whole bunch of atheists going, you know, we need atheist missionaries, obviously, going around the world, but, you know.
I really think it is a wonderful thing that you know, people take, that use faith to do good things. I'm not, and I'm certainly don't want to, you know, attack everyone who has religious beliefs. I just have a problem with when they're, you know, put upon me or when they don't quite make sense to me, but the actions of people who have faith have done great things.
All right, Doris, thank you very much for calling. You know, I used to think exactly the same way you did.
Yeah.
Exactly the same.
And then what happened?
I went one time to a church that really was completely about what I was about. And I was shocked. I mean, I hadn't set foot in the church in like 35 years.
Right.
And went to one, and the first thing I saw was a huge sign opposing capital punishment. I said, you know, I can perhaps deal with it.
Well, then maybe you've got a project on your hands. Maybe by the end of our tenure here together, you will have saved me.
Not hard.
Let's go to Steve in New York City.
Hi.
Hi, Steve.
Hi. Well, first of all, I'd like to welcome Air America to the air. I think it's a great thing that progressive forces now have a national talk radio series. I wanted to just talk a little about your remarks about Utah and some of the problems that sometimes liberals and progressives are considered arrogant. It seems like you're sort of talking down to Utah, and yes, we think of Utah as a highly Mormon state and a conservative place, but certainly there are progressives in Utah. Certainly there are cultural things to do in Utah, and as we all know, there are Jews in Utah just like there are Jews all over the United States. So I think we should be working in a more positive sense and realize there are progressive forces in Utah as there are in New York City and Los Angeles.
Yeah,
and I don't think anybody would deny that there are progressive forces everywhere.
He's talking about my jokes. So, yeah, it's a beautiful state, and there are definitely, you know, plenty of progressives in Utah, and I'm not even, I was really making a joke. Mm.
Well, it was very decent of you to let Kerry get away with wearing his ski suit there, by the way.
There you go. Let's go next to Roman. Good morning.
Hi. It's great to hear you guys. Since you guys have been on the air, I haven't pretty much turned on my TV, hasn't seen the light of day.
Thank you.
I was listening. I got an hour delay out here, so I just heard something on the radio about some guy you're talking to. He's a Republican, but he's not going to be voting for George
Bush. That's right. That was David Catania, who's a Republican Congress council member in Washington, D.C.
Right. Well, I'd like to say that he mentioned something about John Kerry and gay rights. Well, John Kerry may be supporting a state constitutional amendment banning gay marriage, but he won't support a federal amendment banning gay marriage. And in either way, when you look at either John Kerry or George Bush, John Kerry is a lot better on gay rights because George Bush, back in 1998, his answer when a young man named Pablo Zuniga was killed and dumped within 1 mile of the governor's mansion while walking home from a gay bar, George Bush's answer was to shoot down a hate crimes amendment. George Bush pretty much supports murdering gay people, which is kind of passive, you know, which is kind of a passive way of following Leviticus 20:13.
Okay.
I'd sooner support John Kerry than George Bush, and voting, not voting for anybody, as opposed to just not voting for John Kerry is essentially like voting for Ralph Nader, which is essentially like voting for George Bush.
Okay, Roman, thank you. So you disagree with David Catania, who thought that he personally was not going to vote for John Kerry.
He's going to vote for none of the above.
But George Bush advocating murder for gays? Not quite. I don't think so. But
thanks for the call, though.
But I see that, you know, clearly the gay community is very, very split, and Kerry and Bush are going to have to work kind of very hard to get their vote.
Now it's time for us to broadcast our much-feared liberal agenda. The facts with our daily marching orders is late coming from Streisand Compound this morning because Barbara is playing online Scrabble with Fidel Castro. But I think is the lights going on? Is it coming in?
Nope.
The facts?
It came in.
Oh, here it is. Here it is. Okay. Remember, write these down. I'm reading it as it's coming out of the machine. One. Insert flyers into hotel Bibles that remind the reader how racist and homophobic God is. Two, Barbara also suggests we also look the other way when the cleaning woman steals leftovers. Three, as part of your liberal marching orders, you must throw red paint on any well-dressed elderly lady not currently in show business. Four, at some point this afternoon, Streisand's edict is for all liberals to open our borders to any foreigners seeking flight instruction. Five, give prostitutes fur coats, cocaine, and expensive boots so they don't have to work. Barbara has spoken. There's a lot to get in today, so go forth and hate America.
All right, have a good weekend.
Yeehaw.
Did you know Lutheran Medical Center Stroke Center is one of the only New York State designated stroke centers in Brooklyn?
When Mom had a stroke a few years ago, I thought her life would never be the same. The stroke took some of her mobility, but it didn't take the most important thing. Her. We met with the doctors from Lutheran Stroke Rehab Center who assessed Mom's condition. We learned that with the right therapy, Mom could improve her quality of life. And now, thanks to Lutheran's medical team, Mom's able to do more than she has in years.
From the moment of arrival in the ER through rehabilitation in our Stroke Rehab Center, Lutheran's medical team works to minimize stroke-caused disability and ensure optimum recovery. And through comprehensive rehabilitation therapy, patients who have suffered stroke after months or even years may be able to regain function. To learn more about Lutheran Stroke Center or stroke rehabilitation, call 866-LMC-DOCS, Lutheran Medical Center. We are Brooklyn's healthcare leader. Call 866-LMC-DOCS.
You're listening to 1190 WLIB New York, the home of Air America Radio. Air America's Morning Sedition, weekdays 6 to 9, unfiltered, weekdays 9 to noon, the old Franken Factor, weekdays noon to 3, Randy Rhoads, afternoons 3 to 7, So What Else Is New, evenings 7 to 8, The Majority Report, weeknights 8 to 11, on Air America Radio.